Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call the at-large study committee public forum session to order. My name is Vince Cerf. I'd like to welcome the members of the board of directors and all of the participants here in the room tonight. The at-large study committee members who are present tonight include its chairman, Carl Bildt, Chuck Costello, Esther Dyson, Ching-Li Liu, Oscar Robles, and Pindar Wong. I extend to you the regrets of Pierre D'Angenou, Olivier Itiano, and Tom Niles for their inability to participate in tonight's discussions. Our format tonight is fairly simple. I would call upon the chairman of the at-large study committee to give a summary of the recommendations that his committee has made to ICANN. And after that, I would like to open the floor to commentary either from the board or preferably from those in the audience. If necessary, we will ask that we limit the time length of people's comments, but at the outset, I hope that we will have the ability to accommodate all comments, assuming that they are of reasonable length. So, Mr. Bildt, I'd ask you now to take the floor.
Mr. Chairman, thanks very much. I'll run through, although I think the material is fairly familiar to most of you in this room, I'll just go through it very briefly. Let's say before that the at-large study committee was given the task by the board in the beginning of this year to do what was called a clean sheet study of what has been a fairly difficult issue for ICANN during the past few years. And as you know, we've spent quite some time on that, trying to come up with something that might not necessarily be the last word of God on this particular subject, but that we believe meets with some fundamental criteria that is broadly acceptable to most. I don't think it will be possible to find a solution that is going to be 100% supported by everyone. So broadly acceptable to most, I would say, that it is implementable within the time frame that has been set. And I think that is very important, because I think that ICANN needs stability in order to be able to concentrate on what are the tasks of ICANN, and that perhaps particularly in times like the ones we are living in. And part of the implementability is, of course, the financial aspects of it, which we have devoted quite some time to. And as I run through quickly these particular slides, you will see how we have been developing that during the course of our deliberations. Are these that you see it over there, and I see it over here. That's really the first, what we are supposed to do. Whether we have done that or not is, of course, a subject of debate, but that was the task we were given. We found support for these particular principles, and they are not entirely uncontroversial either, because there's a sentiment out there that's also saying that is really this entire issue of at large, is it that necessary for the work of ICANN? We've been discussing that, and we think it is. We think it is important that there is an at-large structure for representation and for participation to engage from their particular point of view in the debate on the different issues that is on the agenda of ICANN, and also to be a sort of ultimate guarantee of the transparency and the accountability of the decision-making process within ICANN, and to provide also sort of a second opinion on the different things that are coming from the other SO. That really is what we are saying here. We think there is nowadays broad support for that. We think that there is a need to move beyond discussion, to start to create an organization to assure not only that representation that you do with the I can hold meetings over the election now and then, but also the involvement in the ongoing debate, the participation I have an organization to do that. Final recommendations, the setting up of an ALSO, at large support organization. To start with setting up an organizing committee to get the process going in order to be able to meet the timelines for having the election that we have proposed for next year, and also after that, of course, to make certain that this ALSO, the new self-supporting organization, can be up and running. We have, of course, have a lot of discussion concerning how that should be done. I mean, you are aware of the structure of our proposal in that we suggest an election with six different regions that ends up with six members of the ICANN board, but it also ends up, even more important, I can say, the six regional councils around the world, so that we get not only at one shot the representation at the board of ICANN, but we also get the regional councils and the global structure that then, of course, is going to mature and develop over time, not necessarily uniform, because the world happens to be a fairly big place, but it will develop over time. There is, of course, here the structure and the possibility to take part in the vote. That's the subject of some debate, but let me stress that then the participation in the work of the at-large supporting organization should, of course, be as much as possible open to each and everyone. I would assume, although we are not the one to dictate exactly how this organization will work or these organizations will work, I would assume that that will be very much online, open meetings. There should not be any restrictions. Everyone that is interested to take part in the work should be welcome and should be invited to do so. When it comes to member, and that has to do with the voting structure and the financing structure, as you know, we have ended up with the individual's domain name holder, and the reason for that we discussed quite extensively in Montevideo. You can approach that both from a philosophical point of view, and you can approach it from the practical point of view. From the practical point of view, and that has to do with the implementability and the possibility to finance it, we have yet to see any other alternative that is implementable and possible to finance self-supporting within this particular time frame. What we have said in Montevideo, but even more in the final report, is that in addition to this, we want to open other possibilities of becoming members. The critical issue here is to sort of verify the individual. And one alternative to doing that is, of course, to do it as it was done in the election last year with snail mail, physical mail. We think that encounters massive problems. We would not like to recommend it, both financial and practical. And that is why we go with the domain name. You can do it there. But there are also other ways of doing it. And as long as we can find ways of doing that, that makes it possible to verify, that could be sort of physically signing up people at meetings or other ways of doing that. I think we should welcome that, and I think we should encourage a further development of thought on the different mechanisms under which that can be done. I don't see, we talk of domain name plus or domain name plus plus plus. I don't see it as one thing to add to. I see it as the possibility of adding different things to, so that people will get the possibility to opt in a way that is verifiable and that also makes it implementable. And there, as you are aware, I think we have gone, taking into account some of the people that we've been listening to and that have been contributing constructive comments, we have been developing the proposal somewhat more in relationship to Montevideo. And we also propose that the further development here will be one of the tasks that should be given to the organizing committee that we hope that the board will be ready to move forward with. Elections, six regions, as I mentioned, six at-large directors in this particular case. That is a third of the board. We recommend then splitting the Asia-Pacific region into two. We say that in case, because some people have been saying this is a difficult thing to do, not that I understand that it is difficult to do, but if it is difficult to do, then of course one can have the option of electing two from Asia-Pacific and one from each of the rest. I don't particularly see the problem with making that logical split up. This also simplifies, as I said, the beauty of it is that in one election you set up both the representation to the ICANN board and the six regional councils across the world and then get them going. And here somewhat more on the at-large supporting organization, what we are think that they are supposed to do. I don't think that we should dictate that too much. I think it will, as I said, develop somewhat differently in different parts of the world. We have been discussing developing some thoughts concerning the financial aspects of it. We've been discussing that in different meetings today. Further work needs to be done. I would, and I think the committee would like to have a financing structure where we have an organization that is as lean, possibly even as mean, as we can achieve, thus also making the financial hurdle for the opt-in as limited as possible. There's always a cost associated with these things. We want to bring that particular cost down, and I would even say that then that also creates an incentive for those that are involved in setting up of that large supporting organization to acquire many new members, because then that's the way to finance the entire thing, not by increasing the hurdle in terms of fees of different sorts. At the end of this particular slide, another aspect where we have developed the proposal in relationship to taking into account the views that were expressed. It was pointed out to us in the discussion we had in Montevideo that with the two-thirds rule for changing the bylaws, that was with our original proposal, the at least theoretical possibility of the rest of the ICANN board taking the decision to abolish at large. That might be a theoretical threat, but constitutions are supposed to deal also with theoretical threats, so as to create an amount of confidence. And we are saying that there should be a majority larger than two-thirds in order to do what we call structural changes to ICANN. That obviously needs to be defined somewhat further, but I think that's an important policy point that was pointed out to us, and I think those that pointed that out to us in criticism to our original proposal, they were entirely correct, and that's why we have taken that into account. Potential for consensus. As I said, it all comes down to what you define as consensus. If you define as consensus that each and everyone will be happy with every single detail, I don't think that's achievable. If you define it as something that most people believe is acceptable and we can work with, I think this is roughly where we end up and roughly where that is possible. We believe that the recommendations that we have are practical, but we believe that they are executable, effective, and most likely to gain consensus support as defined by me now. It is, of course, a compromise. That's in the nature of things. If you've had a vigorous debate, which in the case of ICANN have been stretching over years, and you need to find some sort of solution in order to have stability, in order to be able to move in, there has to be an element of compromise in order to be able to move forward. As said here, we've listened to opinions, you're all aware of that, and we have tried to stimulate the debate in the wider internet community. I'm not quite certain that it's been, Mr. Chairman, a smashing success, in the sense that when we have been out there at different meetings and meeting some of you in different parts of the world, we've also been trying to get those others that are not at these meetings to become involved in these issues. I don't think we've been particularly successful in that, whether that has been the fault of the committee, or the more likely, I would say, is that the ordinary internet users, they're interested in the internet working, period. And they want an ICANN that can supply the services that ICANN are supposed to supply. But there's only a fairly limited number of those people that are prepared to go into the details of the governance structure of ICANN or the different intricacies that is involved in that. That speaks for the more evolutionary approach to these issues that we also advocate. We have dealt quite extensively, as you are aware of, with the different problems that are there. The capture problem, I think, is a serious one. We don't claim that we have found a solution that takes away the capture problem. There is the possibility for capture. There is the possibility for capture in any sort of system that we can see. We believe that in this particular system, we limit, first we will see capture. We will see capture in any system. But we limit substantially the consequences of a successful attempt at capture. I'm not quite certain it will be even worth trying the capture option, but if it is tried, it will be detected and it will have limited consequences. Moving forward is important because this has been an issue for quite some time. It can't be an issue forever. Or rather, it can be an issue forever, but it shouldn't be an issue forever. The original time plan was, of course, for this issue to be settled at this particular meeting of the ICANN board. Now, for reasons we are all aware of, the focus has shifted. Other issues have priority at this particular meeting. We've said that that's understandable, but we've also expressed a certain amount of concern that if we lose momentum, there's a risk of the thing starting to drift again, and then we will not have the possibility of meeting the timelines that is a system in place by next year, and then we foresee that there will be turmoil and continued and perhaps increased controversy further down the road. So that is why we have suggested that the board is ready to take the issue somewhat forward, that one starts to look at some of the implementation issues for this, and then a final decision on that needs to be finalized in Accra in the beginning of March. Then it should still be possible to meet the timeline. But you can hear there's a certain uncertainty in my voice. Can't be absolutely certain. We are taking a calculated risk, and I'm stressing that because I think it's important that one has a certain amount of momentum, even if other issues at this particular period in time has priority. I think with the concern that is out there, outside this room, for stability and security issues, and for the way in which ICANN deals with these, I think that an amount of predictability and stability also in the governance structures of ICANN is part of that concern that is there, and we need to be able to deal with that. We have suggested, as said, that the board is ready to make a certain step. We are ready to stay on to some extent until March to help, but there is a need also for other things in order to look at the more detailed implementation issues that will be necessary. We are very well aware of there being other issues on the table concerning the governance structures, and I think we individually can see merit in those being addressed as well. That's not us, but we can see merit in that being done, coming out from what I said concerning the stability of the governance structure. So that, Mr. Chairman, is roughly it. As you can see, the proposal has been evolved somewhat from Montevideo. The basic structure, I think, remains the same. We notice that there is fairly sort of broad acceptance of a willingness to move along these lines. But there's still a wide open debate, as there should be, and there are important implementation issues to deal with.
Thank you very much, Carl. I appreciate your work and the work of the committee, members present and not. I know this is a very complex subject to deal with many diverse views, some of which we are about to hear. What I would like to suggest, first of all, reminder, if you're going to speak, please log in. I would like to suggest to the board that we use this primarily to hear the commentary of those who are present in this room other than ourselves. We will have an opportunity to discuss this matter in our own forum. So I'd like to, unless there are questions for clarification that come from the board, I'd like to try to restrain our interest in speaking our minds and listen to what other people have to say. So let me start out now with our first guest, whose name is not yet appearing on my...
Tom Cohen.
Because something's broken. Well, I'll tell you what, if it doesn't want to work, why don't you... Oh, here it is. It's Hans Klein. So, Hans, that you're in.
Okay. My name is Hans Klein. I'm the chair of Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility, and I'm on the faculty of the School of Public Policy at Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta. I'd like to begin by commending the ALSC for their work. I think they did a lot of hard work, and the report in many respects is excellent. Particularly, I applaud their recognition of the importance of user participation in ICANN and their argument that that must be retained, which I agree very much with. I would like to address the topic of the what I would call the re-engineering of the composition of the board of directors. The original bylaws defined a board of directors that's a 9-9 balance between users and industry experts. And we've heard various characterizations of that 9-9 balance. I remember there was an important meeting in Yokohama where Paul Toomey and Christopher Wilkinson characterized that as a balance between consumers and suppliers. Other people have seen it other ways. But in any case, the idea of a 9-9 balance has been fundamental to ICANN since its inception in 1998. Now, the report by the ALSC proposes a change to that composition of the board and re-engineering it as a 6-6-6 split of users, developers, and suppliers. And the point I want to make here is I think this 6-6-6 split is really better characterized as a 6-12 split. We're going from a 9-9 balance of users and industry experts to what is effectively a 6-12 balance with 6 user reps and 12 industry and expert representatives. And the key is that the categories of developers and suppliers are quite often referring to groups who are employed by the same entity or work for the same institution. An example, in an IT company, you have developers within the company. You have, once the technology is developed, it becomes supplied to the users, and you have the supply or operational part of the industry. Those are not conceptually distinct entities. In fact, very often the industry will fund research at universities, such as my own, and even the technology research there, which is dependent on industry funding. Often those developers there share a substantial amount of perspective and collective interest with the industry people. So creating the 666 design, I think, is problematic because it creates really effectively a 6-12 split. Now, let me say something. So point one is I think this proposal to have a 6-12 grouping on the board is problematic. It does away with the original balance of it and so on. Now, I think to a certain extent the ALSC does address this, but it's one of the least strong aspects of the report. They claim the original 9-9 balance, I think it lacked logic. In private conversations, it pointed out that even within, you know, user representatives, there are diverse interests, and they said, you know, this 9-9 is not the answer. It has problems. Well, I think that's not the point. Yes, sure, 9-9 has problems. Sure, 6-6-6 has problems. There's no right answer to the composition of the board. There's not a science or an engineering of designing boards. But there's another way of thinking about the 9-9 versus 6-12 that I think clearly differentiates between one that's better than the other. And the key word there is legitimacy. The existing design of the board is the result of due process in 1998. There was an open and inclusive process running through the summer of 98. We had the white paper, the Internet Forum, International Forum and the white paper, global participation, negotiations with the Department of Commerce, and as the result of that complex but inclusive process, due process, a policy recommendation was made. The board would be balanced 9-9. The recommendation to change that to a 6-12 lacks that grounding in due process. I think, again, the ALSC worked hard, but ultimately there were a small committee, appointed by an incomplete board of directors of ICANN, and I think it doesn't have the legitimacy of that early due process.
Mr. Klein, may I just inquire about roughly how long you've...
Yeah, I'm wrapping it up.
Are you? Okay, yeah. Thank you. Just a friendly inquiry.
So the 2 points to wrap it up I think that this shift from 9-9 to 6-12 is problematic, and I think we have a criterion of legitimacy by which the original bylaws, I think, are preferable to the proposal for new bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Barbara Simons from the ACM.
Chairman Cerf, Chairman Vilt, members of the board, fellow at-large members, and how do I characterize everybody else?
Random peons. That's
okay. Yes, peons, did you say this? Those are your words, not mine. I have a couple of points I'd like to make. The first, I think, is pretty non-controversial, and that has to do with the 6-12 split. I believe that the ALSC committee members agree. I believe that Chairman Bill agreed earlier in conversation, although obviously it's not up to me to speak on his behalf, that the decision to do the 6-12 has nothing to do with the expenses of electing 6 versus 9. So I just want to make a comment for the record that the reduction of at-large members from 9 to 6 was not a function of the cost of electing 9 versus electing 6. I mean, clearly, there is probably some additional cost to electing 9, but it's relatively minor compared to the cost of holding elections. So I think that that's, I just want to make that point, that I think that's not a factor. And I don't think anybody is saying it is, but I just wanted to make that point. The other issue I wanted to address is the one of capture, because this seems to be of great concern to the study. I understand the concerns. I think it's of concern to everybody. I think we all want to avoid capture. And again, I want to make two sub-points with regard to this. Capture is a problem, but it's a problem that applies across the board, maybe literally as well as figuratively. So while one has to be concerned about capture for the at-large, there is also the possibility of capture for the DNSO, the ASO, and the PSO. I mean, capture is capture. And the study has addressed the issue of capture with regard to the at-large, but it has totally ignored the issue of capture with regard to the 12. So one can easily imagine, and I'm not saying this is the case, but one can certainly imagine the possibility that some subset of the 12 would also be impacted by capture, possibly a large subset. So the fact that there's all this concern about capture for the at-large and no concern whatsoever about capture for the 12, I find this disturbing. And just the second point about capture, Chairman Bill recognized, and I for one appreciate his recognition, that if the at-large is given only one-third of the seats of the board as the Constitution is currently written, that would allow the remaining two-thirds of the board, should they choose, to eliminate the at-large, because it takes a two-thirds vote of the board to change bylaws. And so Chairman Bill suggested that there be what he's referring to as a supermajority, which is greater than two-thirds, although he wasn't clear as to what that number should be, or would be required to make a bylaws change. I believe that's the right, or at least to eliminate the at-large. Maybe that's not the case for other bylaws changes. I'm not clear, and perhaps he could clarify for us what he's recommending. Again, you get the issue of capture. If it were the case that the non-at-large portion of the board chose to eliminate the at-large, then they could attempt to capture the one or two, whatever number is defined as a supermajority. One or two at-large seats would be all they would need in order to achieve that. So the capture works both ways. And just in summary, I feel that there's a lack of balance in the fact that these issues are being addressed for the at-large and ignored for the rest. Thank you.
Thank you very much for making those points, Barbara. Kin Lam Chong.
Yes, Kin Lam Chong from KAIST. I want to comment on this membership with some implication on the membership fee. I look at this study, and there seems to be a couple weak points. One of them is membership. I guess like a domain name holder, I believe it's a compromise, not because they like it, because they just couldn't find any other way to implement with a reasonable control on the cost. And I thought about this problem, and statistics may help in this case. Like, if I jump to the conclusion, why don't we random sample whoever applies? Basically, I like those internet user, say like pick up just like last time, email holder, if they apply, suppose if you get a 1 million or even a 10 million, do this sort of random sampling, say like we can afford up to say like 100,000, then do the random sampling up to the whatever the number you like, say like 100,000, and let those people vote. There's a fundamental two way of thinking. Domain name holder is a sort of a citizen of this community. And if you want to have a citizenship, then what my argument doesn't work. But if you want to have a representation of our internet user community, then a random sampling is good enough. So you have to change your way of thinking. But if you agree, the representation is what we want. Because after all, you cannot have the citizenship of, say, like 5 billion people, 5 or 6 billion. So you have to compromise with, say like 100,000 people. Then you just do the random sampling. And statistically, either having those 10 million or the 100,000, it's not really different. Whoever took a statistics course in a high school or college should know. Outcome is pretty much the same. So if you agree on the representation, this will work. But if you stick to the citizenship is important, then whatever the current proposal, domain name holder, may be the way. So that way, you can control the cost. And once you can control the cost, probably could afford with some additional donation from the whoever those organizations rather than charging. Because second point is I don't like to see those charging. As we discussed in the previous case, suppose if you charge, please do charge based on those GNP. So if you are rich, $1 means say you just work 10 minutes in this country. But in some country, $1, you have to work 1 month. So if you can scale, it's okay to charge. But otherwise, probably get funding from somewhere else. But my scheme, the random sampling, seems you can control the cost. So you may, that's my suggestion.
Thank you very much, Kim. I have a question.
Before you go away from the microphone, I have a clarification question. Come back. I can ask why you're coming back. Did I understand you correctly that one of the things you're suggesting is that people sign up to buy tickets for a lottery and the winners get to vote?
That's right. That's right.
Well, thank you for that forthright response. I like candor. I'd like to call upon Clement Gidomu.
Yeah. That's correct. I think you tried this time. Thank you very much. I think let me start to congratulate the at-large study committee for doing what we all know is a very, very difficult job. I think I want to take on the point which Carl made. He said their proposal is practical and executable. This is where I have a little problem. I think their proposal actually, although answers some questions, but it left a lot of questions unanswered. That is the area where I have some problems, specifically on the two issue of one, the domain name holder as an entry point, and also the issue of fees. Let me make this very, very clear. These are two distinct barriers of entry. If you jump, if you manage by some miracle from developing countries to own a domain name, just to join an account, you still also have to pay a fee. Somebody is proposing $1, somebody is proposing $2, somebody is proposing $10. What that large study committee didn't actually come out with exactly what fee are they talking about? How high or how low? Because if it's too low, even if you can pay, you cannot transfer it to you. If it's too high, you cannot pay. The point I'm making is that when you come to the specifics, you find out that you have a lot of problem with the large study committee proposal. In Montevideo, I made a point that the large proposal of a domain name raises a lot of questions. One of the key questions is the question of what they call one-to-many question. I gave an example of a university, where we all in a university of 10,000 people have one domain name. Who votes? Who become a member of a large? They didn't resolve that. Let's forget about that problem. Let's not talk about people who really want to get involved in that account now, and the only way they can get in is to get a domain name. Are you therefore suggesting that people from very poor regions of the world try and earn some hard dollar and just use that to buy a domain name for the purpose of getting involved in an account? I don't think that is a bit asking too much. Another point the at-large study committee made is that they claim that the domain name, in fact, is a viable option. All other options are not viable, including the email. I find that a bit disturbing, because we used the email the last time, and it worked. It has some problems. We have 5 directors. In fact, let me quote Mike Roberts. On October 10, 2000, Mike Roberts, in addressing the result of the last election, is quoted as saying, "With the help of tens of thousands of interested internet users around the world, ICANN achieved its goal." Emphasize, achieved its goal of at large globally diverse membership. He went on to say, "And we thank election.com for its successful management of a secure online vote." All this in the name of what? Email. It works somehow. It has some problem. But our last study committee dismisses and say it didn't work, it's not viable, it's complicated, but it worked the last time. Unless you say that they are all the 5 are large directors and elected are illegitimate and they are not viable. I really think that will not be sustainable. I really think that on the question of the fees, I raised a lot of issue in Montevideo, and the last study committee thinks that this is still workable. They didn't make a move on that, any move away from that. But I can raise a lot of issues again. Once you come into the question of details, all they say is that let's charge fees. How much? How low? How high? Who collects? Who enforces? When you come to those specific issues, you find out that all that they're saying is that it's practical, it's executable, definitely it's not. On one last issue, the last study committee in Montevideo recognized that for some developing countries, there'll be a problem of security domain names, there'll be a problem of fees. And they suggested that they would talk to the UN to help. I also heard this morning that they talked about the UNDP. Probably they should tell us how far they have gone in convincing the US to give developing country money to buy domain name just to be part of a large. And I also have some news from you. The UN talked to us. They said, they told us at the finance ministers meeting in Algiers that for the whole world, they only have 100 million for the next 5 years for all their programs. ICT be a small component of it. We told this money is not enough. They said that's all they can afford. I don't really see where you're going to, UNDP is going to get some money in order to help developing countries for just buying domain names to be a member of an account. But I sincerely think that the advisory committee have made some bold steps. But I think the last one specific is, in the final analysis, I was said, the proposal have many questions than answers. And I hope this should be addressed, and I'm sure they also accepted that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Clement. Before Mr. Wei makes his remarks, I'd like to interject one from the net, from Joel Patanstra, who asks the at-large study committee, Can the ALSC provide any assurances that the members with voting rights will be real individual domain name holders and not administrative contacts assigned by corporate bulk domain name holders? Will the definition of the individual domain name holder be tightened to provide this assurance? I think a very interesting question indeed. We have a response now from Kindar Wong, a member of the committee.
It boils down to the level of assurance that one needs, whether or not we're talking about assurance or whether we're talking about guarantees. Can the LLC provide any guarantee that members with voting rights will be real individual domain name holders? No, we cannot. Can we provide some level of assurance? I believe we can. The exact degree to which we believe will be greater than that provided by an email-based system, primarily because using the registry infrastructure, should it be that mechanism, should the registries support this proposal, there will be other mechanisms, the payment mechanism used within the existing registry structure, which will allow an extra level of verifiability that this individual is who he or she purports to be. Now, will there be cases of fraud in this case? Perhaps yes. Again, our focus has shifted away from trying to provide guarantees of prevention to being one of close and rapid detection. Will the definition of individual domain name holders be tightened to provide this assurance? I'm not exactly sure I understand the question. I mean, we've provided a definition for individual domain name holders in our report, and I'm not sure what he means by tightening it. I mean, do we put in there that we need to guarantee that our definition guarantees that they're individuals? Perhaps we could at most say that when you do sign up, that you are, when in the process of signing up, you are guaranteeing to us or to the ALSO that you are participating as an individual.
That's probably as much as you could do, is to ask that someone assert that they are participating as an individual. I call now upon Mao Wei from, you can correct my pronunciation of your last name. Is it Wei or Wei, or how do you say your last name?
This is Mao Wei from China Link.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, my English is not very well, so I have to speak slowly. If you don't understand me, I have some material to give everybody.
So far you're doing very well.
Thank you. I agree with Mr. Kim Chong and this report. I have some suggestion about Aradi report. With the NIC director have enough budget to attend this meeting, so he let me speak out our thoughts about this. ALSC doing a very great job, because this job is very difficult. But if I can decide to do this, it should be fair. Regard as individual domain holder, as a large member, it will not comply with the spirit of ICANN. ICANN is supposed to represent the interests of internet users as broadly as possible. Should not focus on its attention on any special interest group. I read the white paper, I found the spirit. For example, although our chairman of CNIC, he has his own domain name, so he couldn't be a side member. So I think this is very unfair. I believe ICANN should continue to use the original definition at large membership, email account holder. I believe that connect membership fee will discourage a great number of internet users from becoming a large member, especially from developing countries. almost all the international organizations and governments declare to devote themselves to bridge the digital divide. I believe the ICANN certainly does not intend to carry out the board election in favor of the heavies. So I suggest I can find other way to organize and facilitate broad internet user participate in ICANN at large membership without any fee. Just now, Mr. Kinnan Chong suggests a method. I think this is an alternative. I have another alternative rule method. For example, elect at-large voters in every CCTLD area. These candidates of at-large voters can be nominated following the same way, just like the last year ICANN board election. The voter will participate in the final election. The list of nominees for at-large director in each region shall follow the at-large election process of last year. I can create a unified process and supervise the elections. This is another alternative. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking at the list of people who have signed up. There are approximately 15 more speakers. We have about an hour left. I would like to suggest that we limit our remarks to about 3 minutes if we can, and that would allow us to get all through 15 plus a few more. So I'm going to ask the staff to put a countdown up there with your indulgence. I'd like now to call upon His Nice Lady Cristina Karavanova. Cristina?
My name is Cristina Karavanova from APC Internet Rights Project. I'm from Bulgaria, actually. Okay, I have the following question regarding the at-large membership participation. Because in 1999, in the testimony before the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Commerce, was stated that it is ICANN's highest priority to complete the work necessary to implement a workable at-large membership structure and to conduct election for the 9 at-large directors that must be chosen by the membership. Okay. And what is written in the final report of ICANN's at-large study committee in November 2001, it is that the ALSC carefully considered but ultimately rejected as having an unsound logical basis the notion that users' interests are best served by giving at-large half of the board seats. So my question is, why you have changed your mind since 1999? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christina. I'm not sure whether we will get an instant answer to that, but let's press on. Jerry, you're not next. Wolfgang Klangwächter is the next speaker, I think. Have I messed this up?
Yeah.
No, Jerry, you're quite some distance away. I know you're eager to speak, but you're about 6 or 7 people ahead of where you should be. Wolfgang.
Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Wolfgang Kleinwächter. I'm from the University of Aarhus, and I'm also a co-chair of the Interim Coordination Committee, which organizes the dialogue with the ALM directors. You know, I think Carl Bildt is right when he says we have a pressure of time. You know, there is a deadline. There's a window of opportunity, and we should use the momentum. And as I see the report, there are some controversial issues and there are some non-controversial issues. And insofar, I propose that we should continue the discussion on the controversial issues, like 666 or 929, or the fees, or you know, domain name holder, or the domain holder plus, or the plus plus, as I learned this afternoon. But you know, we should at the same time push forward the process by working towards issues which are non-controversial. And I see at least 2 issues which are non-controversial. This is, everybody agrees that there should be an at-large supporting organization. And everybody agrees, as far as I see, there should be at-large regional councils. And in so far, I think it would be the right time now to start to create an enabling infrastructure which would make it possible, you know, to go forward in building these new units, like the supporting organizations and the regional councils. And I would say, you know, the board could maybe start an outreach program already here, you know, to create awareness that, you know, there is an opportunity to create such an organization so that potential members could start a discussion on this. And at least, you know, there should be reserved a full day on the forthcoming meeting in Accra that would, you know, allow members, you know, to create the at-large supporting organization. And, you know, because this is an organization, you always need a leadership. So maybe already in Accra, an so-called interim council for the at-large supporting organization could be established. And my proposal is that the board could ask the candidates from the ALM elections from last year who finished on place 2 and 3, you know, to be ready or maybe to accept an invitation to establish such an interim council for an at-large supporting organization. So then we would have already an interim council for maybe for 9 months until the November 2002. And this interim council of people who have expressed their dedicated interest in the ICANN process, but they finished on the second and third place in their region, you know, that these people could, you know, develop a concept how to establish the at-large supporting organization so that we can settle in the process the controversial issues which, you know, can, if we continue with concentration on this, can block also the debate. Thank you.
Thank you for completing your remarks precisely in 3 minutes. I'm very impressed.
Raul Echeverria.
Good afternoon. I believe that we are confusing conceptual aspects and conceptual discussion with implementation. The domain name holders proposals appear, from my point of view, not because we are convinced that they have to be the members of the corporation, the members of the ICANN. This solution tried to solve implementation problems that have appeared during this process. This proposal doesn't solve, from my point of view, but a lot of people have spoken in the same direction, that doesn't solve the problems that try to solve. And at the same time, it's a solution that doesn't have enough support to be approved. I think that consensus is possible, and it is a positive message. We are in those days, in several meetings, several people, we are talking about distributed register system, distributed systems to register the members. It is a good thing. Several people are talking about consider the local characteristics in local communities to give the same opportunities for everybody, and it is a good thing. But I think that consensus is possible, as I said, but the domain name holder proposal probably is interfering in the search of better solution, because we are, as I said before, more focused in the implementation than the definition of the membership. And the last point is the really the there are more the difference in the number of directors. That is one of the points that we have to discuss. I heard that Mr. Bitt said that 6 directors is a good compromise between 0 and 9, and I don't understand. I hear today here that this we have to find a compromise between 0 and 9. This is it's good for it's new for me, but I really believe that 50% and 50%. I prefer to speak about percentage and not 99, but 50% and 50% is a good balance. balance between who is a good balance between the people who participate through corporation, organization, and have time, support, and money to participate in every meeting in different places of the world, and the people, those who doesn't have this money or time. I am from Uruguay. This is a small country in South America. I have to support the ideas that give more opportunities for our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Raul. Izumi Aizu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was long 3 years ago a member of the MAT, the original sort of, we proposed several things which mostly adopted in the first election. I'd like to just touch upon the most difficult thing, that's financial aspect. And I am a member of NAIS, which proposes the same zero fee concept, and which is largely blamed this time it is unimplementable. It was not last time, 3 years ago. But this is my very personal opinion. I can agree with the fee with certain conditions, perhaps two. One is when we propose the fee, I mean the zero fee at MAG, it's the first round because we need bootstrap. We were not sure if we can get 5,000 members from all over the world. And so we need some sort of incentive. As well as we thought there will be some fixed cost. So if you renew the membership, yes, there could be some renewal cost, but which would be significantly smaller than the sort of the original cost. And then it sort of with the order review, that cost or that money is gone. So we have to rebuild a system from scratch. So I would suggest that all the stakeholders, not necessarily at large, but all the stakeholders of ICANN should bear the cost of the fixed cost. And then variable cost, incremental cost, can be borne by the at-large members. That was my personal suggestion, with another condition, that is some special consideration to those from the lesser developed or least developed countries or world, that the study committee also suggested, but vaguely, that you're talking with UN. But I would like to see much more concrete proposal. How do you do that? In one way is sliding scale. Another is just give exemption to a certain number cap of countries and regions with the definition of the UN and a definition of the LDC, the least developed countries. That's one way to put it. Something like that kind of combination will give this more compromisable or more broader consensus than the existing proposals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For those of you who are standing up, I will be happy to call your name in the right order if you would like to relax and sit down. Just a small warning, at 3 minutes per discussion, we are very close to running out of time at 8 o'clock, just looking at the number of people who have signed up. Esther Dyson, the former chairman and member of ALSC.
It's my feeling this is such an important matter and has been brewing for 3 years that we really ought to give the public as much time as possible to comment on that, even if it cuts into our own personal dinner time.
We had scheduled this until 8 o'clock, Carl, and the other people may have scheduled things besides the board, so I'm trying to take that into account. Esther, please. Why don't you wait until it's your turn to speak, okay? Esther?
Okay. This is going to be tough to do in 4 minutes, because what I'd like to do is address the board, who faces an interesting decision, and I'd like to explain some of the thinking behind what we are doing. I was a board member, as you know. I thought the nine made perfect sense. I also thought it would be nice to make membership in ICANN free. I share a lot of principles that we've heard enunciated so well today, but when you actually sit on such a committee and try and come up with a solution that is going to work, you begin to change your notion of what is workable. And the committee's real goal is not to make statements. It's to come up with a solution that will be so consensus-driven and so practical to implement and self-funding that you guys have to do it. Because we all know how easy it is to pass a resolution to do something that is good and then nothing happens. And so our goal was to design a structure that would actually happen. It is not perfect. There are lots of details left undone, but I think it is doable. Now, let's go back to the elections. You can argue whether or not they were successful. I think fundamentally the whole thing didn't work, and it has very little to do with the elections. It has to do with everything around the elections. There was not enough infrastructure. Some people participate on a mailing list. If you looked at the statistics, you would find a few people participate way too much. Very few other people read it at all. Lots of people leave in frustration. So the challenge here is not just an election system. It's a system that will encourage participation in decision-making, in policy-making, in feeling that you're part of what happens within ICANN. And that does not happen just through elections. Frankly, it also happens through the board responding as well as listening. And I still think the feeling that there's genuine discussion going on is something that's lacking within ICANN. And you cannot have a discussion of 2 million people. You can't even have a discussion of a few thousand. And so we need some way of surfacing not just elected representatives, but also some kind of more self-organizing, more distributed system of participation beyond voting that would work. I have to give up, but I'm happy to talk to anybody. The 9 versus 6, again, I think it's a question of workability, but I also think it's very important to understand that we do not see the at-large membership as a single block that is always going to be in opposition to one or more other blocks. We see them as sometimes representing regions, sometimes representing consumers, along with some of the businesses who buy services from the ISPs. And what we're trying to do is not represent in one slew the voice of the user. We're trying to put in diversity into the board's discussions, and we're trying to make sure that the voice of the public interest is heard. We're trying to foster a channel for accountability. And I don't think any of those things are numerical.
Thank you very much, Esther. Harold Feld's next.
Harold Feld, Media Access Project. Esther, in her last comments, has actually made several of the points that I would hope to make, so hopefully this will make this shorter. First, I do commend the ALSC for report that they produced, particularly in its agreement on the value of an at-large. I would like to, as some others have, point to the first at-large election as allaying several of the fears that have been raised and continue to be raised. The one thing which could even vaguely be called an attempt at capture in the at-large election was both unsuccessful and, to my eye, as somebody who is interested in encouraging public participation, actually healthy in terms of getting public participation from different regions. I would also say that the worry that has been expressed that unqualified candidates might be elected should also have been allayed. Having now had a year to consider the products of the election in your own debates, I would think that you will have come to the same conclusion that the voters did, that these are people who are very qualified, indeed, from North America, and privileged to be represented by Carl Arbach, who I think has unmatched qualifications, both as a attorney able to grasp the corporate aspects and a well-confirmed technical expert. And while it is true that some have regarded him as a controversial member of the board, I would say that this is merely added to the public debate in a healthy fashion. I do think that the change in ratio is damaging to the public credibility of ICANN. Frankly, it makes it look as if those who are now on the inside seeks to preserve their privileged positions at the expense of the public. And indeed, I think that the lengthy time that has passed, the continued presence of members of the initial board on the board has already damaged ICANN's public credibility to some degree and will continue to do so unless vigorous action is taken to elevate the at-large and to resolve these issues quickly and expediently. I echo Esther's comments on the value of diversity and on increasing public interest generally. I also would raise a point that the ALSC, in considering broader change to the board structure, in my own opinion, exceeded its mandate, and I know that they were trying to come up with good suggestions, but it does point to an issue of some concern, which is what is sometimes characterized as mission creep. And the question which has plagued ICANN since the debates that first about its formation of how to restrain mission creep continues to be something that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
I can assure you, Harold, if you can find a way to help us contain mission creep, I will be the first to say thank you. Toshimaru Ogura. I'm sorry, Jerry. I know you're very eager to get in front of that telephone. You are after Kent Crispin, Jerry, just FYI.
My name is Toshimaru Ogura from Japan. And I already posted my opinion to the Forum of At Large Study Committee. Yeah, my position is that more open, more democratic, less restrictive condition is necessary for At Large election. However, that when I read the report, I was very astonished to find that it quote me in that way, completely ignore my actual opinion. Instead, the document and my comments to justify various voting restrictions. So, very brief situation from your report. According to your report, the LSC is concerned by some evidence that the very low entrance barrier in last year at large election may have resulted in a large enrollment of people who were not actually interested in ICANN, but who enrolled only because it was easy or who were encouraged to do so simply because of nationalistic competition. For example, Toshimaru Ogura, blah, blah, blah. And then your report said domain name, ownership, cost, and verification and membership fee may help detail programs such as nationalistic competition and involvement of disinterested individuals and so on. But I'm against further voting restriction, but because of the way my comment was cited, your report may deceive people who do not know my background regarding ICANN at large issues. More specifically, in my views, ICANN should not place any further restriction on its terms of membership, even if during the last election the Japanese government mobilized people who had little interest in ICANN process. Rather, I propose ICANN should resolve the issues posed by such top-down election campaign and do a better job educating internet users. Also, I strongly insist that global democracy is necessary for the internet governance and that all users should have the right to participation in this decision-making process. So I propose three questions to the Trust Study Committee. One, why did you cite my argument without mentioning my main concern? The two, why do you think about my assertion that the more participatory process are necessary for ICANN at large membership structures?
And three, that is personal trustee. I fear that the people who read the portion of the Atlas Study Committee report that quote my me that quote me may misunderstand or misinterpret my views. What do you think about this? Thank you.
I just had a quick clarification. Were you for, I couldn't tell whether you were for or against the term limits contained within the proposal. The proposal contains a one-term term limit and no repeats, essentially with alternate countries. Were you for or against that? I kind of misunderstood you.
President? I didn't do.
Well, I actually don't think that he was speaking to that at all. He was speaking to restrictions on voting of any kind as opposed to term limitations, I'm pretty sure. I don't think
okay.
That's an issue. Thank you very much. Kent Crispin, please.
Kent Crispin from Songbird. I just wanted to say a couple of words about elections and capture. The reason that we're not so concerned, or I'm not so concerned about capture from the other SOs and so on, is because the other SOs have existing structures where we know the people that are in it, they go through long processes and so on. There's a lot of mechanism that you can see that opens up the election to all kinds of scrutiny. With the at-large election, we have no such controls whatsoever, and the consensus among security experts is we simply can't reliably do voting on the internet. There's a very strong urge among people here that we must have voting, and I'm reminded of, you know, people think they have some valuable money and they decide they need a bank, and so they decide, we really need a bank. Well, we don't have a vault, we don't have a building to put it in, so we'll put these wicker baskets out here and put all our money in the wicker baskets, and then, you know, just leave it there for a little while, and we're very happy that only a little bit was stolen. The fact that the elections are insecure is sort of a fundamental problem. It isn't addressed by what happened with the last election at all. The issue of whether it's safe to have an election really depends on how much you value the result of the vote. If you think that it's important that the elections be fair and so on and so forth, then we have a real problem. If you don't think it matters, but it's just more important that we have an election regardless of who we get elected or anything like that, then yes, we can have elections. And that's all.
Yes, Paul.
Clarification question. In the DNSO, are we requiring credentials from people who are members of the business constituency, the IP constituency, to prove they have actually been appointed by their corporations? If not, I would assert that we are trying to apply criteria to the individuals that are not applying to the other constituencies.
Thank you, Carl. And Mr. Berman, you now have the microphone.
Do I have my two times? I signed up, so
no,
I was
going to
also pass. Thank you very much. I'm here partly with a proposal. I think our views from, I'm from the Center for Democracy and Technology, and I think our views on elections and legitimacy and the at-large are well known. But I want to go back to first principles. We are concerned about and want ICANN to succeed. All of us do. We want this new body to continue forward. It needs to be legitimate. It needs to be stable. From day one, a lot of the concern about voting and at large and how many members and who should participate and what should the public voice was really concerned with what is the mission of ICANN. And there's been a consistent confusion and underpinning of concern about whether the mission is narrow, which I believe you believe it is, which I think the articles try to say, and a public perception that ICANN is wide open and can get into many things. Congress is thinking of new ways all the time of, at least our government, of moving it into regulating content, regulating national security. I think a lot of the the concerns of the public and the citizenry would be allayed if ICANN, as part of its final deliberations, restated its mission as part of that final package, that it said, for the public record, that its mission is the technical operation and stability of the network, that it is the dispute resolution, the maintenance of the WHOIS database, and draw a line around that mission and say that is it, and this board's legitimacy should be judged in terms of that and no more. And I think that would add credibility to the final decision, leave ICANN in a space where it can resist pressure to expand, and I think it will help to move us all towards a consensus that we can accept. I don't have the language, but I think a committee that could work on that and say we will restate our mission and it is narrow would be very helpful in final resolution. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Steve Metellus is next, actually, Marilyn. You're about one, two, three people after Steve. This is really wonderful.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to give the views of the intellectual property constituency of the DNSO. We commend the At-Large Study Commission for its work. We support in principle many of its recommendations. We think that they've stressed that an overriding consideration in the development of at-large participation should be the financial and administrative manageability of whatever mechanism is designed, and we think that should be paramount. I'd like to make five specific points. First, we support the proposal to set the number of at-large directors on the ICANN board at 6. We note that this, to the extent this has an impact on the way the rest of the ICANN board seats are allocated, we have to be careful not to disenfranchise any other participants in the ICANN process. Second, we endorse in principle the proposal that eligibility for voting should be based on ownership of a domain name. We believe, however, that all domain name holders, including those in the CCTLDs as well as in the GTLDs, should be entitled to vote on the basis of one at-large membership per domain name holder. I think the idea of domain name plus is also that's come out in the final report is also very useful because there is a potential to disenfranchise individuals and especially where the CCTLDs have very restrictive domain name registration policies, so that ought to be taken into account. I do have to say I agree with a lot of what Ken Crispin said too, that there are some very significant practical problems in any election system, but we basically supported this proposal in principle. Third, the proposal to establish an at-large supporting organization, we think, has to be looked at separately from the question of at-large directors. It raises a lot of questions with respect to financial and administrative manageability. There need to be criteria, clear criteria, such as those relating to significant membership numbers, the ability to effectively keep members informed, adequate financing for meetings and dues payments. All these things are crucial to any ALSO that's going to perform its mission that won't be subject to capture by a small group, which we think is a serious concern. And we think these criteria need to be met in order for the ALSO to be in a position to offer substantive opinions that will help this board. It may not be possible to do that in time by the November 2002 deadline for electing at-large directors, and so we don't think the ALSO should be recognized until it's met these establishment criteria. Finally, we just had a couple of minor suggestions. First, that instead of three-year terms, there should be initial staggered terms of 1, 2, and 3 years, which is how it works in the DNSO and I think in the other SOs, and that it promotes stability on the board. And we also believe that the process should be reevaluated sooner than waiting for two election cycles. Thank you.
Okay. Again, I have a request for clarification. Does the IP constituency consider itself a provider, a developer, or a user?
I don't know that we know which genus we're in as far as that typology goes, and we haven't taken any position on this overall division. We're just talking about the six at-large directors.
You'd have no objection under the rubric of this report of being dissolved, of having the IP constituency dissolved and merged in with the at-large.
Pardon me?
The IP is people are just users.
Let's perhaps not have that debate right now. Marilyn, I know you're eager to get up there, but it turns out that David Johnson and Adam Peake are before you. So, David?
Thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of the GTLD registry constituency, which had a good meeting with the at-large study committee today, and which has stated publicly that it generally supports the recommendations of the at-large study committee. It's really quite remarkable when you think about it. This is a group of sometimes fairly aggressively competitive businesses signing up for governance under a system that they can't control. We would like the at-large, we think it's time for the implementation process for the at-large to go forward promptly, but we also think this is the time for a process to go forward for general restructuring and restatement of mission, because we think proceeding on those two tracks together will provide a process and a goal in which by March we could have a context in which very broad consensus for the overall restructuring can be achieved. The key framework, I believe, for reaching that consensus is a restatement of the limited subject matters of ICANN's policymaking process and a reaffirmation of the consensus policy process itself. And the reason that's key is it moves us from squabbling over votes to efforts to give people a voice. It moves us from politics to conversation. It moves us from efforts to capture to efforts to produce engagement. So I think the overall question the board has to ask itself is, at this point, is not just did the at-large study committee do a good job in beginning us down the road of solving particular issues, but also, what is ICANN's mission? You can't design an institution without knowing what you're trying to achieve. Is ICANN's mission to create a global democracy? Is it to create an open-ended charter to solve any problem that any legislature in the world might bring its way? Or is it closer to what Vint has called the thin ICANN, with a clear mission and a legitimate multi-voiced process? We think there is a way by running these multiple tracks of implementing the at-large study, restating the mission, working on a general restructuring plan to get by March to a result that the entire community can support. We want to particularly commend the at-large study committee for understanding what it is that makes ICANN so special and valuable. And we started with a clean sheet. We think we have part of the outline filled in. We'd like to urge you to fill in the entire outline by March. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Adam Peake. Yes, I'm sorry, Hans.
I would like to ask David Johnson for a clarification because he asked for restating the mission. What do you mean by that? Do you feel that ICANN will have to rethink its mission? Or do you feel that by asking for restating the mission that we should give a clarification in the mission statement?
Very much the latter. I think there have been many efforts over the years in the contracts, in the articles and bylaws to keep the mission small and to state it in a way that can be worked. The issues of surrounding the at-large process have given rise to a lot of misunderstanding and expectations about the possible extension of the mission to many other things. Obviously, we have here a community that is fundamentally focused on making the domain name system work and importantly, focused on making those people who are affected by decisions have a role in saying, in approving new rules that might be made. From their perspective, the registries and registrars have signed up to a remarkable contract that says when everyone in general agrees and when the only dissent is irrational or limited, we will go along with the rules you make, no matter what they say. That is a remarkable contract. It's important for the user voice to be represented there, but it's also important that the mission fulfilled by that contract be very clearly stated, and I think we have the basis to do that in the existing contracts. We're not suggesting we limit that or expand it.
I think that, Hans, I would take that to be a suggestion that we simply restate clearly once again, the limited mission of ICANN. And thank you very much for that, David. Adam Peake.
Thank you very much. Adam Peake from Glocom, and I'm also one of the members of the NICE team. I'd like the at-large study committee to sort of reconsider Clement's earlier points about the problems of domain name holders or requiring that the electorate will be domain name holders and people who also pay a fee. It's going to be extremely problematic for developing nations, and I don't believe that the Allied Study Committee addressed this except to refer to the United Nations Development Programme. So it would be helpful if we could have some explanation of just what the UNDP discussion was. The UNDP is an extremely weighty organisation in this issue, so it's something that I think should be explained. So that's the first issue. The second is that the report refers to individual domain name holders, and I think it's quite clear that it is not individuals who are holding these domains. They are domain name holders, period. AT&T's domain name administrative contact will be an individual domain name holder. I am the administrative contact for one of my organization's domains, and we're a university department. I don't think this is appropriate. The at-large should be the at-large of the whole of ICANN, not the domain name issue only. So those are my 2 points. Thank you.
Thank you for that brevity. Did I see a hand go up, Esther? You were raising your hand about the UNDP question. Would you care to address it? All right. Marilyn, it's your turn.
At last. I haven't been accused of cue creep by now. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm representing and speaking for the business constituency, and I would like to make a short set of supportive comments and then to end my comment with an analogy. We are, as the BC, from the beginning, we started out as a bit skeptical about how this process might proceed, but we were supportive of the need to undertake the process and tried to participate and follow the process. We submitted several questions, and several of the questions that we asked, we feel, were addressed in the final report, or strong efforts were made to address them. We have come to support the recommendations of the At-Large Study Committee as being something that is implementable and supportable. And that is the overall theme to the comments that I will make. Everyone here and everyone involved in ICANN has well-meaning, well-placed, and valid concerns and questions. Be that as it may, ICANN can continue to suffer from chaos and instability, or it can move forward in this particular area and try to achieve some progress and be able to continue to do the work it needs to do in dealing with the rest of the challenges that we all face and that we all care about in ensuring the stability and reliability of the Internet. We were pleased to see that the ALSC, even in listening to people about the positive feedback they got about using domain name holders as the basis, did also listen to comments and have extended their thought now into how there can be a domain name holder plus approach to ensure that non-domain name holders can participate, and we think that's very important and supported. We also feel that the creation of the regional councils and the supporting organization will be a major challenge, and that much of the energy that you see here today, hopefully from people who are decrying certain aspects of the report, can be turned to helping to build those regional councils and structures to ensure participation and representation. We hope that the board will support the extension of the ALSC and the ongoing involvement through the implementation process, and that you will chart an implementation committee. And we look forward to helping to contribute to that in any way that is productive. We had earlier indicated in our comments that we supported maintaining the limitation of 5, but we have moved our support to the 666 balance. Finally, I will say on a personal note, there are many wandering the halls here with a variety of theories about restructuring of the rest of ICANN. I even hear use of the phrase the Big Bang Theory. The BC does not support this. Any further restructuring of ICANN should be undertaken in a thoughtful manner and should involve the DNSO, which in fact has established a structure, a task force, and can begin to get engaged, and parallel efforts should go forth. Fourth, I will say on the use of the phrase Big Bang, that phrase is an interesting analogy. Arnold Penzias, a well-known and internationally famous former scientist, retired now from Bell Labs, won a Nobel Prize for his role in identifying the Big Bang, I think he would be astounded to hear people referring to any further needed restructuring of ICANN with the creation of the universe.
Thank you very much for that one.
Tony Holmes, you have the microphone.
Tony Holmes on behalf of the ISPCP. I mentioned during the Names Council meeting earlier today that we will be issuing a communique and we'll be forwarding that to the at-large study committee. But in order to contribute to the debate tonight, I'd like to read the following on behalf of the ISP and Connectivity Providers constituency. And I want to speak in support of the at-large study committee. Our constituency has met and discussed the final report. We find ourselves in general agreement with its proposed roadmap for general participation in ICANN. We're strong supporters of any proposals whose premise includes the preservation of the fundamental stability and reliability of the internet. Making sure the internet community can participate fully and appropriately is crucial for the future success of ICANN. We fully support the conclusion that there is no meaningful way for this participation to be engineered by governmental or quasi-governmental organisations. Whilst we are enthusiastic supporters of the final report, like many other constituencies, and indeed the authors themselves, we believe that there are still outstanding issues that have to be resolved. In particular, we believe that the way the new at-large organisation is integrated into ICANN needs very careful consideration. Our constituency finds the grouping of developers, providers and users counterintuitive and unconvincing. These groupings do not successfully evoke the rich variety of people and organisations that participate in ICANN. One of the suggestions in the final report is a new model for regional distribution and participation. We believe that the existing model of five regions is natural, intuitive, and well established in ICANN. Having one set of regional participation rules for some parts of ICANN and different rules for others is not just confusion, it will be unworkable for ICANN. So many implementation issues have been left to future work in the final report. We remain uncertain how things will turn out in the future. And with that caveat in mind, our constituency believes that the final report is an excellent roadmap for ensuring open participation by the internet community in the work of ICANN. If that roadmap does not chart every twist in the road or bump along the way, it does not deter our enthusiasm for moving the process forward with thoughtful, prompt action.
Thank you very much, Tony, and an impressive completion in less than 3 minutes. Ilya Nikolts.
Yeah, so much being said now, it's really difficult to find a very genuine new angle, but still. So I'm adding to the discussion about the fundamental future of ICANN here. What made the 100, almost 150,000 people register for this election? It was a vision, I think, and a vision that something new would arise out of these new technologies, new technique available, and a vision of a kind of global democracy, which may not be what you actually want ICANN to be. Which is probably not what you want ICANN to be, but which is what the people saw behind ICANN. And a vision needs no reason as long as the moral is correct. It makes no sense to walk on the moon, but people just did that because they wanted to, and that is what I actually want to point at. This compromise you may find if you follow these rules, these guidelines here, will probably be strong and good enough that people won't throw eggs on you, or you will have to skip open meetings. That happened to groups like yours that have good intentions in the first place, but they suddenly find themselves to be disconnected maybe from the broad public. But the original spirit that I think is behind this idea, this vision that you could be, that might actually change the path of history of humankind. You might at least have some influence on that, be it only as a model for something new, a model democracy, something like that. And I would like you to choose very wisely to when you make your decisions. Thank you.
Well, you certainly put the challenge before us in fairly scary terms, actually. Eric Dierhardt.
Hello, I'm Eric Durker, and I'm definitely here simply as an individual, although I do work with the outreach program under Danny at the GA. I've been working on that since the WG review started up about a year ago. We're making great progress. We're very interested in moving forward. We'll have a little presentation later about some progress we're making with some websites. We have some interesting things going on with internet cafes and possible CCTLD connections that'll try to get some grassroots movements going. Because I don't know, I didn't hear, but I don't think there's another individual speaking here. And as an individual, I'll address the first one. The domain plus was pretty nice to hear today. It was heartening. I think there's some movement going to understand that it can't be just domain name holders, that there's over 500,000 internet cafes throughout the world, and in those cafes, people do not have domain names, but they use the internet every day to contact their mother in a foreign land, to reach back to their home countries that they had to leave as refugees. This is a dominant part of the use of the internet that is becoming increasingly needed, especially during these crisis time periods. We see people reach into the internet and use it. We've got to represent the users. We've got to find some place to do that, to be legitimate, because that's what it's all about. And I know that the big companies have to look at the users in order to sell product, but this group isn't selling product, which brings us to the next phase, membership fees. We would love, all the individuals I know throughout the world would love to object to any membership fees, but we're realistic. Something has to give here. But if there is a membership fee, and let's say it's $5 for the United States, let's make sure it's only 200 dong or 400 peso in Mexico. Let's make sure that we don't cheat the people who can't afford it, who do go to these internet cafes and can barely afford that. The 9 versus 6 seats is a very big problem for us, because this is the basis on which some of us have used the net, that there would be some representative taking care of us. I've gone through our Department of Commerce for those of us here in the United States and all the different ministries throughout the world. There's got to be some representation for the small people. Otherwise, maybe it is not best to have it in this group. Maybe it is best to give it back to some governments that have duly elected members. If we can't do that, then maybe we're not doing it right. We debate constantly whether this should be a society of professionals. I think that we've come to the conclusion that it should not, although it is. All these rooms are filled with professionals. I've learned more, and I can tell you, as I've only been using the internet net for 18 months. I started on this embargo or this trip accidentally, and here I am. And I'm blown away by all this. I know it's hard to get micro looking, but think to the rest of the world, this whole array, the whole guild of talent here, the doctors and all the degrees that are here, it's huge, and you have a huge responsibility. We do wish you would take the individuals and the users into consideration.
Thank you very much, Eric. Christopher Wilkinson.
Thank you, Princess, Carl Dorps, Stuart Lynn. I must say, it's such a long time since I signed on that I've almost forgotten what I was going to say. But seriously, the only point I want to make in this forum
concerns the way in which you decide to represent the public interest in the internet and the user's interest. I think that if you go from 9 to 6, as proposed by Carl and his colleagues, first of all, you give a signal that somehow or other you've decided to reduce the weight of public interest representation. Of course, it depends somewhat on what you do with the rest. 6 in a board of 15 is one thing. 6 in a board of 18 is something different. And I'm not making any assumptions that the 3 posts, the board seats, so to speak, released, will be used for any other purpose. But please understand that if you do deliberately reduce the weight of the public interest representation, however decided, and personally I'm fairly agnostic about the merits of direct election as opposed to indirect election, then the governments will feel that their role is of necessity, and perhaps in spite of themselves, enhanced. The more the board reduces public interest representation through membership and users, the more government you're going to get. And sometimes I feel to a point that the governments would regret.
And so might the rest. Alan Davidson, it's your microphone.
I'm not letting you ask. Thanks. I just want to say a few brief words from the Center for Democracy and Technology. Thank you to the board for taking the time to hear what people have to say about this issue. It's very important. I just add a sort of practical process note about what happens now. I mean, the at-large study committee has put forward a resolution for the board's consideration. As you've heard today, I think there are many areas of agreement among many people, and there's a great deal of that is encapsulated in the resolution. The resolution also, however, appears to lock in a few elements where there's a great deal of divergence and concern, including the question of domain name holders, the question of the number of seats. And I think that we have a chance to reach some greater convergence on some of those issues by ICANN's next meeting. But I would encourage the board not to try to lock in some of those controversial issues in this meeting. I think we could create a process to move forward very aggressively over the next 3 months to try to come to greater convergence on those issues, to talk about a restatement of the mission as a way to make people feel more comfortable about what's going on, and to deal with some of these other issues that will be before the board at the same time in parallel. But I'd encourage you to take that approach rather than trying to lock in too much here. We were very interested in working with the study committee to make that kind of progress. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Alan. Alejandro.
Yeah. Alan, could you briefly tell us what are the issues that you feel you're more comfortable that are not controversial that we could look in?
Right. I think that the issues where people feel comfortable, I mean, I think the resolution before this that the study committee has put forward, for example, I think says very good things about the appropriate role of public participation, the need for public participation structures, the emphasis on participation. It puts forward some principles about ideas about a balanced role for the at-large and an appropriate electorate, but it also then goes a little bit too far in trying to say what that balanced number is, or what that definition of the electorate should be. Those are, as you well know, as you've heard, the areas that we have that divergence. I think you could go very far in passing most of that resolution, and I think many people in this room would feel comfortable with that. But by taking that, if you can take out a few of those points that try to lock in domain name holders, a number of seats, and move forward and say we will resolve those issues at our next meeting. We'll lock in and continue to start moving forward on creating structures, and at the same time we will take up these other issues, including I think this very important restatement of the mission, as I say, as a context for doing this. I think that would be real progress.
Thank you very much, Evan. Christopher Chu.
I just wanted to say that over the past few months, the ALC has worked on this report, has issued a draft report, asked for comments, and has now issued its final report. And I must say that I'm deeply disappointed by it. Quite honestly, the various major faults of the report are still there. I've said for months, along with other people, that the idea of having domain name holders only, as the only source for public input through public elections, that is a mistaken view, that is basically repeating the mistakes of the past, where elections in so many governments, in so many countries, were based solely on the idea that only people who owned land could vote. And that these particular restrictions, along with the membership fees, would have a deleterious impact on the underprivileged, particularly those in developing nations. As various colleagues from African nations, including Clement and other countries in Latin America and so on and so forth, had mentioned. And yet those complaints were essentially ignored or not taken as seriously as perhaps they should have been. On top of that, we hear other suggestions. We hear suggestions that perhaps we should reduce the election to a lottery. I don't know how many of you have actually entered a lottery, but I think you realize most of the people who enter a lottery lose. And in ICANN's case, that could mean millions, not even billions of losers. I don't think we have to go down that route. I think ICANN should avoid having further voting restrictions. I think ICANN should at least ensure that half of its board, at least half its board, 9 members, should be publicly elected. And I think that ICANN should not only state its mission, but should try to stay within it. Thank you.
Hector Ariel Munoz.
Yes, I will give my opinion as an independent member of the ICANN. I'm a member of the IPC. Only 3 points. I think about the issue of user developers and providers, my analysis, there are 2 groups, with economic interest and without economic interest in the infrastructure of the web. With this view, also in the board of directors, coexist 2 systems. One is more business related, no democratic, and one democratic. The for the at large part of the board, maybe it's possible to not be so ambitious to look for thousands of voters in the first part, and maybe it's possible to require a total identification of the user that will vote. Maybe at first will be less voters, but will provide a total guarantee that it's possible to be the voter who is voting. I think this is a possibility that is used in a lot of democratic countries, that is not mandatory to vote, and vote the people that really want to vote, and attract thousands of voters that have no interest in this stage of the development of the web, maybe it's not a good idea. The last thing about costs is that in Argentina, it's totally for free to have
domain name. Maybe it's a bad idea for the national budget, but it's not impossible.
Thank you very much, Hector. Pindar one.
Yeah, so I'll try and keep this brief in the sense that, you know, this has been fairly an educational process over the last year and even before that. I mean, this has been a contentious issue. If one looks at, you know, all the expressions of perspective here this evening, I mean, they're each correct from their perception of the world. You know, it's very, very difficult to argue that people from developing economies need to, some sort of assistance, and any sort of hurdle that would be there to sort of prevent their participation, you know, it's very, very difficult to argue against that. There was a very good point made earlier that, you know, again, one of the things that we're trying to do is provide a basis around which consensus can be conformed. And so, again, I would like to call upon this community and the wider community out there to, again, find areas where that you can agree on. For the areas that you can't agree on, list them, and let's try and move forward. But I believe that, at a practical level, is really what's necessary, because by no means in our report, as is very clear from the comments here this evening, there are many issues that will need to be fleshed out in detail, the little lines in the road, as was alluded earlier. And they are not easy by themselves to solve. And it will require a tremendous amount of effort and contribution, not just sort of the odd email of opinion every now and then. So let's try and find areas where we are in agreement, let's list the areas of disagreement, and let's try and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Pindar. I think that is the only formula that we could reasonably follow. The next to the last person is Ellen Roney.
Chairman Cirf and members of the board, good evening. I'm Ellen Roney. I have been watching the evolution of the domain name system since January of 1996, almost 3 years before the inception of ICANN. In the discussions that preceded the naming of NewCo as ICANN, there was considerable debate about creating an organization that would include participation of the public, a membership organization. Without getting into the details of how many and how they're chosen, I find it very worrisome that the bylaws do not contain any provision for the existence of at-large representation on the board after November of 2002. So I am here to urge you that whatever you decide, whatever aspects you come up with, that by two-thirds vote, you can alter your articles of incorporation. And because public participation in the policy-making process of this corporation is so essential, I would urge you to put that into your articles of incorporation so that those of us do not have to worry that we will again, sometime in the future, see the erosion and disappearance or threat of disappearance of at-large representation on the board. And that's all she wrote. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ellen. Peter, you've written your name twice here, but I only intend to give you 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought my lack of technical sophistication had once again surfaced and my name hadn't arrived. I'm glad it arrived twice. I appear just to say that the CCTLD community has not yet reached a position on this. We've really only begun to grapple with this recently. But I thought it might be helpful for the board to convey the tone, and it's only that, by way of an early warning or an alert of some of the way the CCTLD is shaping up on this. In general, I think there was unanimity that CCTLD, the main name, should not be used as a way of calculating the electorate, and most felt that domain names in general were not an appropriate way of calculating the electorate. Third, most of the CCTLDs pointed out that they would not be able, by reason of their national law, to use their domain name data to be used for calculating the electorate for obvious reasons such as privacy principles and so forth. Many of them, well, that's the three that I think we have the clearest sort of a view on.
Peter, would you come back for just a second? I would like a little clarification. So do I interpret that to mean that the CCTLD community, as you represented, thinks that no registration under a CCTLD would be appropriate evidence that someone is qualified to participate in the at-large electorate process? Is that the way I should understand you?
Well, it's difficult to try and pin down. There's an enormous range of views expressed.
Oh,
in the,
okay. So you're trying to capture this very roughly.
I'm trying to synthesize. There was views expressed, as you'd expect, as there are from the entire community. Some don't think that there is any such thing as an at-large community, and others think that we should wholeheartedly embrace and support the effort of the report. The concern is the use of the domain names as a means of identifying the at-large. Most of them take the view that domain name registrants, particularly in the CCTLDs, are a defined electorate for the CCTLD constituency already, and many of them feel that the needs, including the at-large needs of the CCTLD registrants, are being provided for by that mechanism.
I see. So the concern might be a kind of double counting problem. Is that roughly what?
Possibly, but the authors of the report, who I have to say have done all they can to reach out to us to get our proposal, the delay is entirely of our own making, have explained that there are interests that go outside the CCTLD type interests, including accuracy and transparency and accountability of the whole ICANN process. So it's difficult to know what the limits to the CCTLD objection is, but what is very clear is the difficulties that most countries will have in relation to privacy law in using the domain name registration data to be handed to someone else for another purpose.
Okay, that may be a question of mechanism. I don't know. I think it was voluntary, for one thing. I don't believe anyone suggested in the KLSC report that the domain names be captured in any fashion at all. The individual decision. I do not see any additional names on my list. Let me ask the board whether there are any further questions for clarification. Well, in that yes, Peter Wong. Pindar Wong.
I'm Peter, call me what you want.
We could do something with that.
Well, there was a number of questions raised addressed to the LSC, and I think if there's no further comment, we would like to take the opportunity to clarify.
We welcome that. Please go ahead. Yes, sir? Are you volunteering?
There was a very specific question about what if there are discussions with the UNDP. And this is in one of the very fundamental things that's emerged, and this has emerged on the basis of the feedback we've gotten, is that domain name holders does not excite everybody. And we do not see it as a huge matter of principle. We see it as a convenient way to reach and identify people. And so we're eager to find other convenient ways to reach and identify people that will be more inclusive and, again, that will win consensus. One of them would be to work with the UN to help find and sponsor people either to buy domain names or simply to be verified and become at-large members. We would be happy to work also. Simply showing up at an ICANN meeting is another way to verify yourself. The specific discussions with the UN, frankly, have not been as promising as I'd hoped. They've listened with interest. I have assured them that we're not trying to get money from them, but if they would endorse this and be willing to administer such a program, I personally would help them go out and raise money, and Niamh being aware of this as well. I wanted to say one other thing briefly on this issue of privacy. Given everything you've heard here, I think it's very important that one way or another, the people who vote understand that transparency is important and at least have their names visible. There are going to need to be mechanisms for mailing lists that protect people from spam, but at the same time allow both the would-be directors and other people to reach the voters as well as to engage in discussions with the participants. This is something we need to do a lot of more detailed work on, but I think it's very important. And it's a non-starter that there be a secret electorate.
Thank you very much. Carl, you wanted to, I think, perhaps have the last word, please.
Well, not necessarily, because I do think that to some extent we sort of move over the same ground back and forth, to some extent the same people, the same arguments, or that we change location, which is not necessarily bad in itself. And just want to stress that I think it's been illustrated here, there's a sort of a broad view of how one could perhaps move this forward, although there are question marks, some of them fundamental and some of them of the technical and implementation nature. If we are going to be able to deal with primarily the latter, and they are, some of them are significant, the technical implementation issues, and let me stress again the financial implementation issues, because if we end up with something that is unaffordable or unworkable, then by definition it's not going to work. We need to move forward with those particular issues. But it's not possible to move forward with them if you don't have sort of at least a concept of the framework in the direction in which we are headed. And that really to sort of amplify the concern that I had in the beginning, that although the borders in its endless wisdom, this is flattery of the worst sort, now sort of changed sort of the perspective of this particular meeting, so it would not be resolved here. I am somewhat concerned that we don't let this issue drift for too long, for too much, because then we will lose the possibility of dealing with the implementation issues in such a way as to be able to sort out the major issues in a reasonable time frame. Then there are other issues that have been raised. There are the wider ICANN governance issues, and I think, speaking more personally for us, one should look at ways of addressing those. That's somewhat outside our scope. There was the issue raised here on the sort of the definition of the task of ICANN, whether that can be done or not. I'm not entirely certain it can be done, but I think that debate is also an important one, because there are those who want to have sort of a wide sort of democratic structure for ICANN, global or not, which by implication over time is bound to lead to mission creep, and is going to lead to a situation where mission creep can't be sort of in principle resisted. And that also leads to the importance of that particular debate. But finally, I think it's important to move the issues forward. We do find that now and then there's a new issue being brought up, but overall I think we know the argument and we know the issues fairly well. We know that we need to deal with the implementation issues. We need to engage somewhat more broadly. I, just for the fun of it, when we had the discussion here concerning the need for public participation in ICANN, I did a head count of people. I took away the board and the committee, and then I did the headcount here and compared it with the headcount in the bar. And I am happy to note that there were more people here than outside in the bar, but I can tell you it was very, very close.
And the bar is going to become much more populated very shortly. Andy?
Excuse me, and that's exactly the reason I wanted to raise a question to the LSC. Because we're talking about procedures all the time, and when you're talking about issues, also in your draft document and in the document itself, issues seems to be standing just for procedural stuff. So I wonder, what about identifying the impact ICANN's decision and procedures have on the users, and why should they participate? Someone said here, Christopher, too, that if you reduce the participation possibility to domain name holders, that's only people who have a piece of land. Yes, that's one possible way of doing it. But if we watch the impact ICANN's attention to intellectual property has and the UDRP, it means we throw people out of the domain space. And then we reduce the participation possibility to those who still have one. Hey, that's an issue. And that is an issue that makes people upset, and that's an issue why people want to participate into ITIN, because they don't want it driven over by business interests. And all your documents, I miss the issues. I miss the questions of what's the problem ITIN has on the namespace, what's the reasons people should participate. You're talking about procedures and go on, make your decisions. But I really miss the key points. So I'd really like to hear from you, what about going another way, and that's not going through procedures and asking how many seats, watching what we're talking about here. Because we're talking, excuse me, in my sense, all this is procedural bullshit we're talking here.
Esther, would you like to defend the procedural bullshit?
No, actually, what I would like to do is I would like to pit Jerry Berman's version, a restricted ICANN, against Eric Dierker's version, and see what we come out with, because I think that actually would be a useful discussion, because ICANN does indeed affect the interests of individuals in a specific and small number of ways, and it's important to understand those as we think about what is an appropriate way of finding and identifying members.
I'd like to hear those small number of ways, because I think it's a large number of ways.
This may be a discussion at the bar. Jonathan?
No, I'm going to avoid any discussion of intellectual property, because I'm obviously prejudiced in its favor. But since both Carl and Andy have spoken about this, I think I'd just like to briefly say that to set their minds at rest, first of all, I have great faith in the at-large study. I think it was a necessary exercise to have independent people take a look at how to deal with a very tricky problem. And I understand the concerns about procedure, but I must say, from the other side of the coin, I'm troubled by the fact that although there was a broad-based consensus, at least at the time, to have this study, that the only thing I'm hearing is dissatisfaction with the fact that somehow there may be fewer seats, as though they were your seats. I mean, I don't think the seats belong to anybody. Once you're board members, you become a member of the board. You don't represent at large or intellectual property or business. I think you represent the board in the best interest of the internet. So I think that we're being very unfair. We spent a very large amount of money and an awful lot of time to do this study. I'm not saying that it isn't possible to discuss it or to even criticize it, but I think it's being dismissed out of hand in many regards by people who walked into the study with a preconceived notion of it. I mean, there are many people who don't want any at-large, which is foolish. There need to be at-large members, in my view. But at the same time, I think that those who look at this study without any objectivity, and I'm not listening to a lot of it today, concern me just as much. And especially when I hear veiled threats, you know, from governments and et cetera. I mean, this is out of hand, in my view. I think we ought to take a look at this study as having been done with the agreement of the community at a great deal of expense over a great deal of time, with input from a broad cross-section of people, including everybody here, and see if we can't find a way to make it work rather than prejudging it based on preconceived notions of what's fair. I mean, if we were going to do that, why even bother? That's my
comment. Jonathan's absolutely right. I mean, when one is on the board, this is not a political office, this is a corporate office, and our obligation is to the corporation. And that's something that me as an at-large director of constantly have to remind people that I do not represent them. My loyalty is to the corporation.
Well, you could represent them as well as others. I mean, you need to represent all interests.
Yeah, but my focus is on the corporation as a whole. I have to look at everyone. However, there's a point with respect to the process, and the thing I find very weak about the report is I see lots of conclusions, but I see no methodology. Carl, when he just did the measurement of the count of how many people were in the bar and how many people were here, it was actually the first quantitative procedural I've seen associated with this report. And I think that's a major weakness in this report, is it's very conclusory, and there's really not a lot of evidence backing the conclusions. I don't see rationales. I don't see, I see claims of consensus, but I don't see any evidence backing it. And to me, that's a major weakness.
Well, Carl Bildt, you wanted to respond to some of this, I think.
Well, comment on Andy's point on the procedural bullshit. I agree. I wouldn't phrase myself quite like you did. But fundamentally, I agree, and I do think it is. I'm an outsider. I came into this process whenever that was, but some time ago. And what I find somewhat, as an outsider, disturbing with the way I see ICANN working is that it has been bogged down into procedural issues, call them bullshit or not, or call them constitutional governance issues if we want to be somewhat more. But essentially, we mean the same. ICANN tends to get bogged down into constitutional issues, governance issues, or procedural bullshit. And I feel rather strongly as the outsider coming in that there is a need to get some sort of resolution on these issues. They might not be final forever, but so as to make it possible for ICANN to move on to the issues of substance and have the discussion, both the discussion outside of ICANN and inside ICANN, focused on those particular issues. So even if we have somewhat different sort of conclusions, I fundamentally agree on the need to move forward, get away from the procedural bullshit, and concentrate on the substance of ICANN.
Thank you very much.
No more bullshit.
Well, it seems to me that we may have... I'm sorry, Jerry, did you...
I didn't have a motion.
I see. Do you have more procedural bullshit? It's all right. You don't have to log in. We know who you are. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make it clear when Esther raised my name in terms of the mission again that I do stand with Esther on this issue and the idea that ICANN's mission is now. There isn't a month that doesn't go by when someone else isn't coming up and saying there's no disability interest on the ICANN board. Where is there going to be represented? Or the consumer interest? That is a total misunderstanding of the function of this organization, and I urge you not to let that linger. And it would be a public service to draw that line and make it clear that those are terrestrial government functions and do not belong here, and the legitimacy of ICANN will be strengthened. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I think we will certainly work towards that. I'd like to draw this evening to a close. I'll take advantage of the chairman's microphone for just one more moment to thank the committee for its months of work, for its report tonight. I think that we've heard possibilities for agreement. We've heard some areas where there continues to be disagreement. I believe that we do have to move forward. And so I hope that we will be able to formulate a path which allows us to continue the work of the committee and to continue to find a way to represent public interest in the job of ICANN. So I officially call this public meeting to a close tonight and wish you all a pleasant evening.
this is not stuff in my mouth. I don't know.
No? You did your
I own a computer, but not a laptop. A notebook.
You may indeed.
Take a break. Happened during our session.
Maybe after the formal presentation, we'll take a 5-minute break. Give everybody a chance to walk around, and then we'll open up the mic. Two-minute warning. We'll be starting this meeting in about another 2 minutes.
Say it to her when...
Okay. We'll manage. Fine.
Say 52 or anything.
That's true. Let me have a chat with Don. Maybe he can help us out with it. Some fresh water. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're ready to begin the session of the General Assembly. I'd like to welcome you all to the Late Show. The General Assembly has been rather busy over the course of the last few months. We've undertaken some major projects, and we do have some important news to convey. In the context of the discussions with respect to the recommendations of the At-Large Study Committee, the General Assembly notes that representation and process are major, major issues that are affecting the entirety of our organization, and that includes the DNSO. Within the DNSO, many of you are aware of the fact that the membership of the General Assembly does not have voting rights. We consider that to be somewhat of a problem. In view of that, and in view of the fact that ostensibly a review process was initiated a year ago, we have taken it to the point of a motion that we will be addressing to the board. The motion was put forward by one of our members, and I'd like to read the motion to you and to let you know in advance that this motion was passed by our membership by more than 80%. The motion: whereas the domain name organization formation concepts adopted by the ICANN board March 4, 1999 state that the ICANN board should periodically review the status of constituency groups to determine whether all DNSO interests are adequately represented,
whereas members of the General Assembly have repeatedly expressed their concern that the DNSO as currently constituted is not sufficiently representative, and whereas problems outlined by the DNS review have not been remedied internally, and efforts undertaken by the Names Council have failed to sufficiently address these concerns, it is therefore resolved that the ICANN Board be advised that, number one, members of the General Assembly believe that DNSO dysfunctionality requires direct ICANN Board intervention. Number two, the General Assembly seeks to establish a representative balance by being placed on equal footing with the current DNSO Names Council and creating a bicameral DNSO. Number three, the General Assembly seeks initial budgetary secretariat support for the DNSO General Assembly to perform its functions, and the General Assembly will work with ICANN to develop an appropriate funding model to support its own activities. The General Assembly seeks representation on the ICANN board to be filled by a representative voting the recorded consensus of the General Assembly. The Assembly seeks to have both an advocate and a consensus leader, both elected positions of the General Assembly with budgetary control and responsibility for all General Assembly staff. Finally, the General Assembly reaffirms our commitment to the DNSO as originally envisioned as a place for cross-constituency dialogue and consensus building, and we request the Board to fulfill its obligation to facilitate the entry of thus far unrepresented constituencies. The motion was passed by a substantial margin, and I'd like to bring to your attention one comment that was put forth by one of our members describing why we took this particular vote, what's at stake for us. He writes, "Now that the motion is passed, let us see what the ICANN board does with it. They can either take action or not. If they ignore it, then we'll all have the answer as to whether or not we've all been wasting our time here. It's been a year since the issue of GA representation and effectiveness was raised, since the WG review was started, and more than a year since the call to responsibility was made. We now have a General Assembly motion passed that puts the point of the question to the ICANN board in terms that even their lack of response would be a clear response. They either answer the GA representation issue somehow or they don't. Not answering it is a clear response in and of itself." We're at the point where we've gone through an entire year of waiting. Waiting for the council to do its job, attend to the issue of the necessary review of constituencies, of representation, and to bring forward a reasonable plan to the board. At our last session in Montevideo, I recall Vince Cerf making the comment that all they are looking for is a reasonable proposal, and they simply asked the Names Council, at least with respect to the concept of an individual's constituency, to bring us a reasonable proposal. Here it is, 2-3 months later. Again, we have nothing. Again. It comes down to this. There needs to be value in participation. If all we have is a chat room and nobody's listening, then why are we here? If we wind up creating an at-large supporting organization and don't provide opportunities for discussion, for voting, all of the necessary mechanisms that go hand in hand with participation, then we have nothing. We have to learn from the mistake of the General Assembly and make sure that as we move forward into proper representation, that structure is in place, because given that structure, reasonable people come together in reasonable discourse and results are produced. I'd like to move on now to a brief introduction of a project that we're rather proud of. The General Assembly received a letter a few months back from a young lady from Zambia that wrote to us about her experience working in an internet cafe. The comment was basically made that it's great having an internet cafe, but frankly, it still costs a lot of money, and we don't have a lot of time to be online. We thought it important, number one, to be able to create a place where we could have digests of the ICANN news all in one location, and more importantly, that we could fulfill our obligation under the bylaws to translate necessary ICANN documents into appropriate languages. With that in mind, we launched a website called ICANNworld.org, and I'll ask Ben to bring that up on the screen. And as you'll note, our bylaws do state that the corporation will facilitate the translation of final published documents into various appropriate languages. It hasn't done its job. We are here to remind them that this is part of our core mission. We are here to reach out to the world, to get them involved, not only at the General Assembly level, but at the at-large level as well. And Ben, if you could hit the enter button. The site is generally navigated by way of country code selection. So that is to say, we could pick, Ben, pick any one of these, whatever strikes your fancy. Bosnia-Herzegovina. On this particular page, you'll note that we have four languages listed. Clearly, at the moment, we don't have translation for Bosnian, Serbian, and Croatian. We have an English translation. But we are also cognizant of the fact that we have a community of CCTLD managers with a responsibility to their community. We are going to be reaching out to those managers to ask for assistance in a language translation project. We'll be happy to extend a great number of courtesies to the CCTLD community. We'll be able to ask a picture to be put up of the local CCTLD manager, his biography, a message to the community. We'll be happy to create local message boards. We'll be happy to provide space for banner ads for domain name registration. Essentially, we are going out of our way to make sure that outreach happens on a local language basis worldwide. We will be collaborating with all the folks that have volunteered to participate in the President's Task Force on Simultaneous Language Translation. We will be reaching out to the academic community that through their universities can also participate in language translation projects of this nature. Every CCTLD page will have local news on it. And Ben, if you could just click on English as the working link on this page. You'll note we begin with an introductory message, and once we enter into the site, what we now have is a brief summary of ICANN News, the ALSC final report, the recently released UDRP questionnaire, the fact that we are discussing restructuring the DNSO, the recent position papers of the Names Council with respect to geographical names. Beyond that, we have a list of documents that we seek to have translated. We have daily domain news from a news service, so that at least by just clicking on one link, everything that's happening in this domain world will be at someone's fingertips. We're hoping that we can move forward and have very good news to report to you by Ghana in terms of participation and in terms of perhaps using the site to facilitate outreach, in particular to the at-large community that needs to be advised as to the election process, how to move forward, how to campaign, how to put their members up for nomination. We want to make sure that whenever, however possible, it can be done on a local language basis. That's the end of my comments. We're going to try to keep this short and brief tonight in terms of comments. And we'll next move to our new secretariat, Glenda Sanjuli.
I want to start off with a tribute to Elizabeth Portneuf, who was the secretary before me. And thank Elizabeth on behalf of the domain, the DNSO and the Names Council. I saw her here a minute ago, but I see she's gone out. We appreciate and recognize the thousands of hours of unstinted work, technical skills, professionalism, tact, discretion, and interpersonal relations that Elizabeth put into the Secretariat and the DNSO website for such a long time. I don't think anybody can really know what Elizabeth put in of herself until it came to taking over the job. Philippe Renault, my technical right hand, and I thank her very much for her methodical instruction and patience. Ah, there you are, Elizabeth. It's a special tribute to you and a special thank you to you. Philippe Renault, my technical right hand, and myself, thank you for your methodical instruction and patience in making this a smooth transition. It's a challenge following in your footsteps, and one I hope we will be able to meet with success. The Secretariat goes on, but remember, there's only one Elizabeth Portneuf. My report will be very brief, just some of the milestones of the year 2001. In January and February, there was a draft NC business plan. Version 4 was drawn up, and the version 5 came towards the end of February. Two teleconferences were held in January and February. In March and in April, the NC meeting held in Melbourne, March the 11th, coincided with the ICANN meetings as usual. It was also the close of nominations for the GA chair and the alternate chair. It was an NC resolution on the proposed revision to ICANN VeriSign NSI agreement. The GA chair and alternate chair appointed Danny Younger and Patrick Corliss. At least the GA chair, Danny Younger, was appointed, and the alternate chair, Patrick Corliss. Two names conference teleconferences, names council teleconferences, were held in March and in April. In May and June, the names council meeting held in Stockholm coincided again with ICANN on the 2nd of June. The DNSO Who Is survey was posted on the ICANN website for comment. Two GA representatives were elected to the NC review and the UDRP task forces. Motions on an individual constituency and support to fund the DNSO and all other ICANN supporting organizations were agreed upon by the GA vote, and there was a teleconference in June. July and August, two GA representatives were elected to the IDN and the .org task forces. There was one teleconference and the preparation for the vote of the ICANN board member. In September, there were two Names Council meetings in Montevideo, also again at the same time as ICANN, on September 8 and 9. At the Montevideo meeting, it was confirmed that Amadeo Abrilia Abril had been elected to the ICANN board for a 3-year term. The new secretariat was present, though not in an official capacity. At the end of September, the new secretariat spent 4 days working with the new ethnic engineering team, assuring a smooth takeover of technical and managerial functions of the DNSO secretariat. In October, there was one teleconference on October the 11th. Two public comment lists talks were opened, the NC interim report on the review task force and .org resulting from decisions taken during the conference. The NC commentary on the GAC resolutions was posted to ICANN, and the DNSO GA voted on the DNSO reorganization, the vote which Danny has just read to you. Then there's a summary, a voting summary for the year. In March, there was a vote on the election rules for the DNSO GA. The result, the election rules should be adopted. In March and April, there was the election of the GA and the alternate chair. The result, Danny Younger and Patrick Corliss as the alternate chair. In May, there was a vote on two motions. The individual constituency, where 75 agreed and 15 said no. And the second motion to fund the DNSO and all supporting organizations, where 74 agreed and 14 said no. In June, there was a GA election to designate its representative to the NC Review Task Force. In July, an election to designate its representative to the NC UDRP Task Force. And in August, another GA election to designate its representative to the NC IDN and .org task forces. And then in September, there was the election of the ICANN board member, which resulted in Amadeo Abril for the 3 years. In October, specific tasks undertaken by the new secretariat was the vote on the DNSO, the GA vote on the DNSO reorganization. The result is 90 agreed, 24 disagreed, and 14 abstained. This vote ran from Monday, the 22nd of October, starting at 18 hours CET, to Monday, 29 October, ending at 18 hours CET. The work it represented. To launch the vote, there's 2 hours technical preparation, 1 hour secretarial work, and 4 hours technical work counting and sorting votes. All this has to be done after hours, as the vote closed at 18 hours. When the vote ended, it was counted and there was 1 hour preparation, sending it to the watchdog committee for confirmation, and this too after hours. And there was 1 hour secretarial work setting up the results to be published on the list, which in a total was 9 hours, 9 full working hours. Then there was the UDRP questionnaire. The secretariat was asked to put the questionnaire in English online so that it could be completed by as many people as possible, that is, clicking and filling in the answers. Time spent on this was a day and a half from the technical staff, and 3 hours secretarial work coordinating the technical staff and getting the questionnaire out in time. Notices were sent out to constituencies for contributions to the DNSO. In consultation with the ICANN secretariat, reminder notices were sent out to 3 constituencies that were outstanding in their contributions: the CCTLDs, the non-commercials, and the ISPs. In the meantime, the ISPs have paid up fully, so it seems that it is only the non-commercials that should be taken into consideration, with perhaps the difficulties they have in paying. There was a Names Council teleconference on the 11th of October, and the 2 public lists were opened. As I have said before, the .org and the Names Council Review Task Force. Both of these were closed at towards the end of October. A new feature has been added to the DNSO website, which is on the front page on the left-hand side. It is statistics which have been compiled by WebEliza, version 201. And they go from the period in the beginning, May 1999, and they are updated each month. And from that you will see that there is a terrific amount of traffic on the DNSO website. In fact, the website is bigger than that of ICANN. Just in conclusion, I would like to talk about timelines for agendas and accompanying documents. They must be sent to the Secretariat 3 weeks in advance. 2 weeks is an absolute limit. And please do keep these deadlines so that work can be done efficiently and orderly. Because when one gets agendas at the very last minute, 3 or 4 days before a meeting, and they have to be put up properly, and there's a weekend in between, and there's traveling in between, it's not very easy. Thank you.
And thank you for that timely notice. I'm sure there are many constituencies that will take that to heart. All right, moving right along, and we are going to move right along. I next have the distinct pleasure of inviting David to the podium. David, we spelled your name incorrectly. We would like to apologize for that. David Hernand, New.net, will be addressing us with respect to representation, process.
Thank you, Danny. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the General Assembly tonight. From my watch, it looks like we're entering into the 14th hour of presentations today, and starting to look like an ICANN telethon. So to the persons listening on the webcast, I hope the viewers at home are enjoying the show. As Danny mentioned, I'm David Hernand, CEO of New.net, a domain name registry and registrar business that is using a market-based approach to expand the availability of more logical and easy-to-remember domain names. You all know that our company has engendered a fair amount of controversy in ICANN circles, much of which I think is highly relevant to issues that are currently being considered and debated by members of the GA. Accordingly, I thought it might be helpful for me to provide some background regarding New.net, our objectives, our experiences in the ICANN process, our views of ICANN, and the need for change. Let me begin with some background on New.net. We formally launched our business in March of this year and began selling domain names, with ending in 20 new domain name extensions such as .shop, .inc, .kids, .family, .sport. We offer names that are more descriptive and relevant than traditional domain names that make it easier for websites to communicate what they offer and easier for consumers to find what they're looking for. We recently introduced many more descriptive extensions in French, German, Italian, Portuguese, and Spanish, all with the aim of making internet navigation easier and more locally relevant. We plan to do the same thing with non-Latin-based languages later this year. NewNet utilizes the existing distributed domain name system to resolve our domain names, and all of our names follow the www.something.something syntax that ordinary internet users understand to be a web address. Our overarching mission is to improve the current domain name system to make navigation easier and more productive. As is often touted by our detractors, new.net domain names are not universally resolvable. We try to be very clear about this. Rather, our names are accessible in two primary ways. First, the names will resolve if a user is accessing the internet by using an ISP that has added subzones for each of our extensions to the ISP's name servers. This is a simple solution that takes a few minutes to implement, and it is the solution that has been implemented by all of our ISP partners to date. The second approach is the use of a small client application that enables individual users who are not using one of our partner ISPs to also see our names, be able to use our names much like any other name. This client application is available in places like CNET and ZDNet, and it also comes bundled with some of the most widely distributed free software on the internet. And through this process, we add about 1 million users a week. With both of these solutions, new.net names can be used like other names for browsing, email, FTP, and other applications. We have built a massive network of users. Thus far, we have convinced 5 of the top 7 ISPs in the U.S., the top ISP provider in the U.K., the leading Spanish language ISP in Latin America, and many other smaller ISPs worldwide to support resolution of new.net domain names. In the United States, this means that over 40% of all dial-up accounts are already new.net enabled. Together with our deployment of our client application to individual users, we currently have a base of over 73 million internet users with access to our domain names. This number does not include everyone online, but it is what we have achieved in our first 7 months. We plan to get to 100 million internet users by the end of this year and think we can get to 200 million by the middle of 2002. Our goal is simple, to continue expanding the reach of our network, reach critical mass, and ultimately achieve universal resolution. New.net represents a massive, voluntary, and growing network of ISPs and individuals that choose to obtain access to a naming system that supplements the naming system based on top-level domains included in the U.S. government route. It is a voluntary network that exists, and indeed our company exists, expressly because ICANN has not moved quickly enough to release additional descriptive and useful top-level domains sufficient to satisfy market demand. It is thus somewhat ironic that ICANN staff and many of its supporters object so strongly to our efforts to channel market forces to enable dramatic expansion of the namespace. The staff apparently objects to the idea that tens of millions of internet users should have the choice of using more descriptive domain names that in no way conflict with ICANN-sanctioned names. In contrast, we think that the existence of our vast network demonstrates the lack of consensus support for the ICANN staff's strident opposition to alternative naming systems. We think that the ICANN process has been hijacked. The ICANN staff's view of new.net and other alternative naming systems is symptomatic of a larger flaw in the overall ICANN process. The ICANN staff seems to perceive all independent action outside of its direct control to be a threat. New.net fits into this category, as do the CCTLDs and even the General Assembly. The ICANN staff is insisting that everyone agree to top-down directives in order to participate formally in the ICANN process. As many of you know, the ICANN staff refused to let new.net provide refreshments for this GA session because our views are different than those held by the staff. So I apologize if you're hungry. Apparently, if you believe that it is technically feasible for users to access both the U.S. government route and competing naming systems, then you should be banned from the process. Perhaps Carl Auerbach should be forced to resign from the board for harboring such views. Perhaps AT&T should be excommunicated from ICANN because AT&T owns a new.net domain name. Obviously, such actions would be absurd, but would be entirely consistent with the current approach being taken by the ICANN staff. We think this approach turns ICANN's original charter on its head. ICANN was originally formed to create an inclusive environment for bottom-up consensus-based coordination of the Internet's central technical functions, to foster a support-based structure for a distributed domain name system, and to introduce market economics to open up the domain name industry. Unfortunately, a central control mentality has completely taken over, undermining ICANN's original objectives. I don't think that I have to convince most of the people in this room that there are many participants in the process that feel disenfranchised. In fact, we've been hearing that throughout the evening. I can tell you that my company has made repeated efforts to participate at various levels within the ICANN process, and doing so has been a pitched battle met with stiff resistance from insiders that use ICANN as a tool to further their own interests and use doublespeak, or perhaps we should call it ICANN speak, to justify policies and actions of exclusion. The reality is that this so-called consensus-based organization is run with top-down decision-making. Repeated calls for making this organization more representative and efforts to give Internet users and individual domain name holders a broader voice in the process have gone unheeded, at least to date. And who knows what the future holds. So what is the solution? What do we do about it? Despite ICANN's shortcomings, we do not support abandoning ICANN altogether, but we share the view of many persons that significant reform is needed. We share the views of many groups that are clamoring for ICANN to become more representative of the broader Internet interests affected by its decisions. But ICANN's role also must be scaled back. David Johnson said earlier tonight, and some will remember his presentation in Stockholm regarding two different models for ICANN, a thick ICANN that purports to be the sole semantic gardener of the namespace, and a thin ICANN that is more like a trellis that allows many different kinds of plants to grow and prosper. We, too, advocate a thin ICANN, calling for ICANN to return to its intended role as a technical standard-setting body instead of the Uber government that the Internet that it appears headed to become. Of course, many in ICANN's inner circles claim no interest in becoming a government, but as the old saying goes, actions speak louder than words, and we think their current actions scream at this point. With a thin ICANN, the organization would be able to better focus and fulfill its technical coordination mandate. Today, too much of ICANN's energy is spent on trying to extract loyalty oaths from persons and entities that interact with ICANN and negotiating massive legal contracts. With a thin ICANN, there would be less perceived need to exclude parties with opposing viewpoints. Global governance structures also would need to be invoked only on rare occasions for truly key issues. Finally, a thin ICANN could allow for Internet users to directly participate in the selection and success of new top-level domains via the marketplace. Sadly, the prognosis for change within ICANN does not look good, at least from our vantage point. The trend line seems to be towards greater control, less debate, and a broader scope of authority. The ICANN staff changed the agenda for this meeting to focus on Internet security matters, potentially resulting in expanding ICANN's purview and postponing having to address difficult restructuring issues until next year. Moreover, the staff is now using rhetoric to define anything out of their control as a threat to the Internet. They describe us as a threat to the Internet, as an actual threat, as a security threat. This includes alternative naming systems, broad participation of ordinary Internet users, ccTLD's demands for independence and recognition, and so on. In contrast, the real threats to the Internet's stability and vitality are continually expanding centralized control and top-down decision-making, demanding loyalty oaths to participate and gain recognition in ICANN processes, intolerance for different viewpoints, and resistance to broader representation. These efforts to centralize control run counter to what the Internet is all about. The Internet prospered because it is organic and decentralized, and it is diversity that gives it strength, resilience, and adaptability. Efforts to resist change and innovation threaten our security. Despite the trend in the wrong direction, we hope the General Assembly members will continue to use their voice to demand that ICANN return to a more limited technical standard setting role, embrace truly inclusive bottoms-up processes, embrace the principle that market forces matter, and adopt the perspective that the staff serves the Internet addressing community and not the other way around. We at New.net thank the General Assembly for this opportunity, share our perspectives regarding the direction that ICANN appears to be headed and the need for change. We hope to continue our active involvement in ICANN wherever possible and in the General Assembly. Thank you.
Thank you, David. We'd like to again thank New.net for having generously made the offer to sponsor a beer and buffet session for the General Assembly. Sadly, we must report that ICANN staff decided that this was not to be. That said, we now move on to our next presentation. We're now asking Mr. Ken Hansen from Newstar to give us an overview of a major success moving forward with the .us CCTLD.
Good evening. First, let me thank the chairman and the DNSO General Assembly for having me here this evening. I really appreciate the time to give you an overview of .us. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Department of Commerce selected Neustar to be the new administrator for .us to CCTLD for the United States. I'm going to take you through a brief overview. There's additional information on our website, including our complete proposal to the Department of Commerce, if you'd like additional detail. Just a little background on the existing .us space. The existing .us space is a hierarchical space. It's a geographically referenced space. I give an example here of a domain name in the .us space. The existing space is useful. It's primarily used by state, local governments, municipalities, libraries, schools. But it is hierarchical, which means it contains fairly long domain names at the third and fourth level primarily. It is a space in which the registry responsibility has historically been delegated to delegees. There are over 800 delegees in the existing hierarchical space today. It's no centralized whois. Today there are inconsistent operational procedures and service levels in .us. Because it's hierarchical, because it's not highly promoted, because there's not registrar competition within the existing space, it is fairly underutilized. There are only between 18 and 25,000 names registered in the existing space. But this is an overview of the existing hierarchy. As you can see, it contains multiple levels, and as I said, serves a very useful purpose for those public interest name spaces that it serves today. As I mentioned earlier, Neustar was selected by the Department of Commerce. It was a four-year agreement with two optional one-year renewals. Neustar will be playing multiple roles as the administrator for .us. We will be operating the registry. In addition to that, we have a policy development, a registrar accreditation role as well. And we play those roles with the oversight of the Department of Commerce. We have been tasked with not only maintaining, but enhancing the operation of the existing hierarchical space. The existing names will be unaffected by Neustar assuming the administrator role. In fact, the operational enhancements we introduce will benefit the existing hierarchical space as well. The major development in the .us space will be the introduction of second level registrations. As we've all come to know from some history, short, memorable domain names tend to be more popular. We expect .us domain names being available at the second level will create tremendous demand for the space. And it will be, we intend to promote widespread acceptance and use of .us domain names in that new expanded space. In addition to that, we will seek to enable innovation within the space, innovative new service enablers through technology, the latest next generation technology that we'll introduce at the registry level. We'll introduce a competitive registrar model for the Department of Commerce RFQ, and there'll be an annual registry fee to the registrars of $5.50 per name per year. This is an overview of what's new, what's changing in the .us space. As I said before, probably the most significant change is the introduction of second-level registrations. Individuals, governments, public interest organizations, and businesses will all have an opportunity to register names within .us. In essence, what .us will facilitate is the establishment of an American identity on the Internet, be that an individual, a government entity, public interest, or business. I give some examples here. There is a nexus requirement within .us. What that means is an individual must be a resident of the United States to register within the space. A business must have a bona fide business presence in the United States. Government entities will also, of course, be able to register. Primarily state and local governments, we expect to take that opportunity. We also propose a number of what we call managed name hierarchies. These are third-level, second-level reserved names under which we'll accept third-level registrations. An example of that would be parks.us. There are several types of managed hierarchies. Many of them are public service-oriented, been set aside prior to the beginning of registration so that they can be put to work to serve the public interest. There are also names that have been set aside that will allow for the future introduction of innovative services as well. It's a thick registry model with a centralized WHOIS, advanced search capabilities. We're also building, we'll work with the existing delegee community to build a centralized delegee contact database that doesn't exist today. We intend to institute high levels of security, reliability, and availability in the registry infrastructure. Why .us? Why do we need to open it to second level registrations? Why do we think .us will be attractive to registrants? First of all, an address in the real world does two basic things. It says something about who you are and where you are, and we believe that .us does those two things very effectively. .us domain name says I am an American, we're an American business, and I'm located in the United States. In some marketing research we did, Americans and American businesses identified very much with .us and preferred it over many of other top-level domain names. The initial market survey also indicated a number of applications will be popular within .us, namely email, identity applications, personal websites, and we expect e-government applications to be enabled within the .us space as well. Here are some of the key major milestones in implementing the new expanded space within .us. The first step is the transition of the authoritative name servers. That transition has already begun and probably be completed sometime over the next several days. Under the RFQ, the Department of Commerce requested the initiation of a study of the existing space through outreach to the existing .us community and delegees. In conducting that study, we're to look at compliance with existing policy within the space and recommend operational improvements. The study is slated to be completed within the next 6 months. Registrar accreditation will require Neustar to develop accreditation standards for registrars as well as a registrar agreement. There's a draft agreement in our proposal. It is a draft. We're working with the Department of Commerce to finalize it. In the coming months, we'll also finalize the accreditation procedures and requirements within the .us space. It will be an enhanced sunrise period within .us to make available to trademark holders .us names before they're made available for open registration. Fortunately, here in the U.S., we do have a an authoritative database of trademarks, the Patent and Trademark Office database. We'll be able to validate the trademarks that the trademark owners hold in registering the names under the Sunrise provision. There will be a land rush process, which will include three major elements: an application process. There will be randomization utilized in the selection process, and the selection process will take place in a round robin fashion. Live registrations in the new expanded space, that is, registrations at the second level, is targeted for sometime in mid-2002. The report I mentioned before will be completed within the next 6 months. And in the coming months, we'll be working with the Department of Commerce in forming an advisory council that will act as a broadly representative group to advise us on changes, innovative services, policy changes that should take place within the .us domain space. All new policies, procedures will require the approval of the Department of Commerce as well. So that's a brief overview. As I said before, there's a lot of additional information available at our website, newstar.us. There you can find a link to our complete proposal. I would be happy to stay around as long as you folks like and answer any questions you might have after the session this evening. Thank you very much again for the time. I appreciate it.
Ken, if you can spare a moment, I'm sure that we still have people here from the different civil liberties groups that put in preliminary considerations to be part of a policy council process. Perhaps some of those folks would like to just take a moment to address any concerns that they might have.
I'd like to ask some questions. My concern is that the allegation and contact with the ICANN. As I know it, that U.S. is also one of the CCTLDs. And recently, we have known the retaliation procedure of that AU. So what I want to know is how that U.S. will proceed the retaliation process in future. And will you have any contract with ICANN? We have documented procedure for the redelegation of CCTLDs. It is based on the RFC document 1591, and also we have another Internet Coordination Policy document, ICP1. So based on those documented procedure, will you proceed at the redelegation process? I have never read any INR report for this issue, the redelegation of that U.S. from Network Solution Incorporated to Newstar. That's my question.
Let me make sure I understood your question first. Your question regards how Newstar will work with ICANN relative to .us. Is that?
Ken, I believe that he's saying, number one, will there be an actual contract established between .us and the ICANN organization? And number two, what is your view of the redelegation process as it pertains to .us? Because it doesn't look as if that process was invoked in the course of your acquisition of this domain space. Part two, I believe, deals with typically with the .au situation. We understand that recently the domain was redelegated from the management of Robert Ells to a new caretaker, and it actually went through a process that involved the ICANN organization, whereas in your particular case we see a different process at play.
Okay, the RFQ from the Department of Commerce specified that we are to work with the Department of Commerce and ICANN to come to an agreement which once agreed to will be signed. We are in discussions with ICANN. We're in discussions with the Department of Commerce about that agreement, and we'll continue to work towards coming to an agreement that both the Department of Commerce and New Star can sign.
Harold Zeld, Media Access Project. Media Access Project was, as you know, of course, involved in the discussions this summer over the redelegation of .us. I was wondering if you could expand on one of the points at the very end, which is the Policy Council. As you know, and some of the other folks here probably know, there was a separate initiative that was sponsored by Center for Democracy and Technology. MAP participated in that. It's in a number of other organizations representing a considerable cross-section of commercial and non-commercial users. Part of the process, I'd very much like to hear where you're going on those issues.
Well, let me first say that a few things. First, the membership of the Policy Development Council, which proposed to New Star that an agreement be signed prior to the submission of our proposal to the Department of Commerce to use that entity as a policy formulation mechanism. Was certainly contained members that are important, have a significant role to play, will certainly be involved in any open, broad consensus policy making procedures that we go on. That we in a large part agreed with many of the policies outlined in the agreement we were presented by the PDC. If you read the New Star proposal, there are many elements of the PDC recommended procedures, guidelines, practices reflected in the New Star proposal as well. We do intend to form a policy advisory council that does have broad representation, including the organizations that were involved in the PDC, of course, would be not only welcome, but we think required to be truly representative.
Ms. Roney?
Good evening. I'm Ellen Roney. I have two questions. First, relating to Sunrise, I know the RFQ included a provision for the UDRP. Did it also include a Sunrise, or is that something that New Star proposed? And then I have two follow-ups to that. Did the RFQ include a provision for a Sunrise period for trademark owners, or is that something that was part of your proposal?
The Sunrise process was specified in the RFQ.
And my follow-up on that, and then I have one other question, is yes, there is an existing database, so I'd just like to understand, the Sunrise will only be for registered trademark owners?
Yes, because there is an authoritative database of registered trademark holders, we will be able to accept registered trademarks during the Sunrise period. As you're well aware, there's no common law authoritative database of common law trademarks. So, and unfortunately, there's no database to query and include in Sunrise.
So I'm not an attorney, but I know that the underpinnings of trademark law are first use, seniority of use. Is that something that you are going to honor if somebody, the later Sunrise applicant, is really the earlier trademark owner?
The trademarks would have to have been registered prior to October this year. Any trademarks that are not registered with the PTO, of course, still have the same force of law. They have the UDRP process, which we fully support and endorse.
my final question. There's been some discussion that that .us is really a valuable resource, and that it's a resource that was developed by taxpayer dollars, and it was basically given to you at Newstar, and that it will be developed into a basically goose that lays golden eggs. Could you comment on that, please?
Sure. I would comment by first of all, by saying a number of things. First, Newstar will be investing tens of millions of dollars in the .us infrastructure to provide the kind of mission-critical reliability, availability, and security that's required for the space. It requires a major upfront investment. It's been suggested that a public resource like that should have been auctioned off, for example. Auctions, first of all, that with the large investment that's required to support .us, and the fact that we have been tasked with managing the .us space for 4 years with 2 one-year renewals. We are not taking ownership of the .us space. So we're providing a service. We're managing the .us space. We're not acquiring an asset. So that asset is not being transferred to us. We will be the caretaker under the contract for the next 6 years. Also, traditionally, when you have an auction model, the cost of the auction or the purchase of that asset generally tends to be passed down to users in the form of fees anyway. That's been the general situation in other technology arenas where you have auction or you have an asset purchase. It gets baked into the cost of providing the service, and eventually the taxpayer, the end user, does pay for the service anyway.
Ken, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Please. Up to you. We're rather informal here.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm Charles Chaban from TAGI. I have one concern. Although we love to have more domains, but how can we be sure that no other company will offer the same domain names? And then, for example, they have some agreements with some ISPs you have with another. So the consumer or any internet user will try to reserve this name. If I reserve the same name with you, the other company, the other person with the other company, he will have which domain name will be, who is the owner of the domain name. Why I'm asking this, because we have this situation in other languages. For example, in Arabic and Korean, I know about.
Thanks. Give David a chance to get to the podium.
It's a good question and a fair question, and it's one that exists today. There are competing naming systems, there are AOL keywords, there are real names, there are other types of keywords, and whether you can use a particular naming system depends on what application you're using to access the internet or what ISP you're using. And so we are offering greater choice by going out and building a vast private network. There will be other companies. There are other companies that are trying to do the same thing. And these are companies that buy for attention and try and build up their own network. Our hope is that we will be successful because we've built up this network of 75 million and plan to keep growing. Others will may try and do the same thing. Ultimately, we think the market will decide the issue as to which names get traction and which don't.
This is acceptable, but I mean, sometimes we have the same, for example, if another company offers the same domain name, the same TLD, for example, shop. Mm-hmm. If they offer another TLD, this is no problem. The problem is when you have the same TLD, which will make, I think, a confusion, which already is happening in some languages, as I said.
I think what generally happens is that if a company is successful with a particular format, for example, if we do a very good job of selling .shop domain names, and those names are purchased and used, then other companies that want to set up competing systems likely will not introduce a .shop, much in the same way that we chose in our business not to introduce a .com, because it's not very smart business if there's already a business that's making a lot of headway in a particular with a particular name. It would create confusion, but that's not all that different than the types of confusion you get in the marketplace when there are competing products. When you've got Microsoft operating system and an Apple operating system, or you have different cable choices you have, and you have to choose one or the other, these types of choices that consumers have to make already exist.
These are good and fair questions. I'm hoping that if Bradley Thornton is in the audience, that perhaps Bradley can address the issue of collisions in the namespace, at least from the perspective of the other communities that are involved with this issue. I know we're jumping ahead of the schedule, but I think it's germane, and I think, Bradley, you can address this if I'm correct.
Yes, certainly that is that's a very valid question. Multiple instances of both top-level domains and second-level domains currently do exist. One example that I'm familiar with would be a gentleman by the name of Jerry Warren registered warren.family. Now, I believe he was successful in registering both at NewNet and at the Pacific Root, warren.family. So effectively, he has managed to sidestep any issues that may arise from that. However, there does exist technology, and this technology can be downloaded from various sources that gives you immediate access via the browser only to access portions of the inclusive namespace. In the case of NewNet, if you download that plugin, what you're going to see is one set of top-level domains available to you. What we've done in conjunction with some of our strategic partners out there is spearhead an attempt because of the awareness of the community that there are multiple top-level domains by the same string out there, to give the user the choice in the event of a collision to choose which version of that collision that they want to see. It's met with some mixed feelings on both sides, and it's been very successful. The same thing has occurred with the two existing .bizzes that are out there. There's the Georgia Corporation Arnie. They have a .biz that's been in existence since probably 1995. I'm guessing December 95, if I remember correctly there. And the one that was just introduced. So where the issue of these plugins at this time, we're not aware of any plugins for the browser or the Winsock layers for the Microsoft operating systems, mind you, that address the issues of email. In other words, they don't run down to the resolver level for the system OS. They do give the user the choice of being able to see domains in an inclusive namespace. And then where collisions exist, there is at least one plugin available that does give the user the choice as to which version of that collision they would like to see.
All right, Bradley, so essentially what you're saying to us is that the technology is out there right now, so that if I'm interested in .shop, and perhaps .shop exists as a string carried by new.net on the one hand, and perhaps Pacific Root on the other hand, that as a consumer, I have now got through technology the choice of picking which one of those versions I actually want to look at. So this is one way of addressing the issue of collisions. But frankly, it's a much bigger issue. We are dealing with ICANN, frankly, creating the first collider with the .biz. And as time goes by and the namespace becomes more crowded, invariably, there will be more collisions. I think what's important to us is to try to get a feel for what your community is trying to do above and beyond a purely technical solution to try to address harmonizing the namespace.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, some issues are beyond the control of the various registries and TLD holders that exist today and their operational registries, such as Mr. Hernan pointed out, other companies that may seek to introduce instances of colliding top-level domains. At this point, we see that there, from the perspective of the Pacific Root anyway, that there are a few basic ways to deal with this. One, there are organizations out there that seek to resolve these issues amicably by getting the TLD holders together and working that out. And that can be done a couple of different ways. One way is that they can sit down at the table and discuss how the interests of the users, the registrants, mind you, could be best served by the merging of the two databases that exist as the colliders. Another method is, and unfortunately this seems to be the way the things, in many respects ICANN does set the precedent here, that we're just going to have more than one instance of a particular top-level domain, and that's sad. Again, the consumer is going to have to choose, and we let the cards fall where they lay. Now, again, with this browser software, this plugin software, which was actually developed by a gentleman named John Vance, it does not address email issues at this point because of the nature of the MX record and how it works in the domain name system. What people seem to be most interested in is going to websites and viewing the content there. On the other hand, there are people that are interested in purchasing domain name registrations for speculative purposes. So with respect to that, the browser plugins do address this issue, but we do have very serious concerns with the possibility of email collisions, misdelivered communications, and things at the SMTP level that, to date, these browsers plugins cannot adequately address. Now, I know that NewNet was working on a solution for something like this. I don't know if they've actually come to fruition on that or not. We'd be very interested in looking at that technology and see what we can share on that.
Thank you, Bradley. I appreciate it. I believe we've got the registrars scheduled up next. Do we have either Mr. Wesson or a representative from the registrar's constituency here? So I know they've been involved in long all-day meetings, and we've been running a little bit over schedule. If not, let me look about and see if Peter's here. Do we have Peter DeBlanc in the... Elizabeth, you could take a look. Thank you. Hopefully we'll be able to hear from Peter with respect to what's gone on today in the CCTLD community in respect to their efforts to move forward in terms of forming a CCSO. I know it goes to the heart of issues of representation, and there are many of us that support the CC initiative, and we're hoping that they have something positive to report. All right, while we're waiting for Peter, we'll make it simple. At this point, we will open up the microphone for any comments that folks would like to make. There were a number of issues raised today in the at-large study committee. We know that the General Assembly has got some major concerns about the report. The views expressed by the Assembly are the views that were, frankly, addressed in the public forum, as many of the General Assembly members chose to participate in that particular forum. We were somewhat dismayed to hear the committee seem to indicate that they had wide support for their proposal, since we certainly didn't see it on the public forum. And we certainly would have appreciated, especially after having spent $450,000 on this project, to see a little bit more documentation, let alone justification. But be that as it may, we're here to simply say that we want to move ahead. We need to move ahead with this. And on the part of the GA, we've put in a fair amount of time and effort discussing representation and moving forward. And we look forward to doing more of the same over the course of the next month or so. I don't see that we've got Peter here as yet. We'll wait for Elizabeth to report whether she can find him. And if that's not the case, then I'd like to ask if anyone else has comments that they would like to put forward. Eric?
Yeah, Danny, Eric Durker. I'd like to know the mechanism that's being used to put forward the motion that we passed overwhelmingly, the actual real mechanism.
Okay, for starters, after the vote was publicly recorded and posted to the General Assembly list, a copy of that motion was distributed on the Names Council list. Additionally, as chair of the organization, I forwarded the correspondence directly to Vint Cerf, to Alejandro Pisanti, and to Stuart Lynn, and received a reply from Vint that our particular motion would be circulated among the board members for consideration. So at this point in time, the motion of the General Assembly has in fact been received by the board, and now we are awaiting their comments.
So ICANN has no procedure where you submit something and they have to give you a response in 20 days, or they have to acknowledge it, or they have to bring it to the floor? Or?
Well, I'm aware of the reconsideration process and how long that seems to take. And I'm aware of the fact that the IDNO submitted their petition for individual domain name holders well over 2 years ago and haven't received a response. So I guess my answer would be that it's somewhat up to the board to decide when and how and if to respond to petitions.
So maybe ICANN or the GA should adopt the board's new policy on procedural bullshit.
We're all doing our best here. Peter, nice to see you. I hope you've had a good day with the CCs, and I've got something enticing to report.
Good evening. My name is Peter DeBlanc. I'm the CC manager for .vi and the chair of the CCTLD Administrative Committee. A brief report on our activities of the last 2 days. We always have an extra day of meeting. We started Sunday. While the focus of our meetings were on CCSO formation, we did go into agreement with the ICANN agenda, the topic of the time, and we had three sessions on internet security, specifically having to do with CCs, the backup server systems for CCs, and the possibilities of organizing some CCTLD root server or server constellation for backups, which would be made available to all CCs, particularly those in developing and emerging countries that do not have a lot of connectivity or a lot of technical expertise. Sabine Dolderer of Germany discussed concepts of shared secondary name servers, where CC managers could actually have a small partition of space in a server. These servers would be located, by the way, geographically distributed, and also in places where there was high tier one internet connectivity, bandwidth, and access to a lot of ISPs. It's very effective, very productive seminars, and we will continue that work on security and develop a report on what CCs are doing about security during our next constituency meeting, which will be at 15:30 hours on Wednesday, in time for presentation to the board the following day. We had some presentations on internationalized domain names by MINC and by the Internet Engineering Task Force. We received our secretariat support. And, of course, we had our usual meeting with the GAC. Now, with respect to the establishing or moving towards a CC supporting organization, we have a draft document now, which is being refined a little bit and being checked out to see if it is in full conformance with the ICANN bylaws. And it is likely, not certain, but likely, that that draft will be presented to the board in the second board meeting. You'll note that there are two board meetings during this ICANN series of meetings. The first one will focus on security. The second board meeting is called to other matters, which would normally be the matters that would be taken up by the board were we not doing the security. So we anticipate presenting this draft to the board at the end of this series of ICANN meetings. Along with the CCSO discussions, in a move to secure support and address the concerns of other constituencies, we met with the business constituency, the intellectual property constituency, the ISPs, and the ICANN board and staff, along with the non-commercial constituencies, to explain our thoughts about the CCSO and the rationale behind our moves, even though, of course, we have been committed to this for almost a year and have consistently announced our intentions and moved to gather support. In addition to that, we listened to a presentation from the ALSC and had an opportunity to ask them some questions. And then, of course, the counter presentation from NAIS. And with respect to the At-Large Study Committee report, we are drafting a series of comments. We received a very lengthy series of comments drafted by .cn, China, and .vn, not Vietnam, and with the support of the Asia-Pacific Regional Association, comments about the ALSC report, and we are looking for areas in which the CCs may endorse a portion of that report, or at least areas where CCs have enough of a feeling about that report to make some statement. We will be delivering the result of that also to the board as our formal commentary on the ALSC report, and that would happen at the second board session, which I believe is Thursday. And that is basically it. Any questions?
Peter, I've got one first question. With regard to the CC's continuing participation in the DNSO, is there a particular schedule in mind? You'll be staying with us up until a certain point. In your own mind, have you determined what that point might be? Are you basing it on a fiscal year in terms of your financial contributions?
We would hope that this will all be, well, we had hoped that this would be transacted by the end of this meeting. It may not be. The other constituencies are concerned that they will lose communication with us, particularly in some areas where domain name administration and policy may overlap, and that, of course, would be GTLDs. The business constituency also has those concerns. We have, in conjunction with our meetings with all of the other constituencies, developed mechanisms, possible mechanisms, for continuing to relate with those constituencies and remain in close touch. And we feel that we've satisfied much of the concerns and we have a viable mechanism to relate. As far as when we would actually leave the DNSO, I would imagine that there will be a transition at the time that our CCSO is recognized. So I wouldn't put a specific time limit on it. We had hoped that it would be at the end of this ICANN meeting, but it may not be that fast.
Understood. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you.
All right. This is a final call for comments. And as I see no hands waving in the air, I'd like to thank everyone for attending, and let's head to the bar.
Well, folks, here we are again now. We're going to have a regular old shindig.